Much outrage today about Rachel Reeves freezing the threshold at which people have to start paying back their loans, meaning more and more low-paid young graduates are going to have to pay more in interest payments to the Chancellor. She insists it's fair, but quite clearly it isn't. This is a national disgrace. It's a national scandal, and yet it's barely being talked about. Why does nobody seem to care that young graduates are being ripped off, and why are they getting so little support?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a report found more than 90 children came to harm after being treated by a surgeon at Great Ormond Street Hospital. It follows a review into Yasser Jabbar, who treated hundreds of children between 2017 and 2022. Some of his patients were left with chronic pain, deformities and nerve damage. Matthew Shaw is the hospital's chief executive.
There are reasons, but there are no excuses for what has happened. What I want families to know is we've taken this incredibly seriously. We have reviewed all of the Royal College recommendations and they are completed in full. I can genuinely say the department today is safer than it has ever been, but I am deeply and profoundly sorry for all those children and families that have come to harm as a result.
A 15-year-old boy has pleaded guilty to murdering a schoolboy as he walked home through Parkland in Birmingham. He didn't know Leo Ross before stabbing him to death in the Hall Green area last January. A 7-year-old girl's missing after being swept out to sea while on holiday in Morocco. The child from Blackburn in Lancashire was sitting on rocks at a beach in Casablanca with her parents when she was hit by a large wave yesterday. The Foreign Office are in contact with the local authorities. Democrats in the United States Senate have blocked a wide-ranging spending bill over the deployment of immigration agents. They've threatened to do so, demanding Donald Trump reins in his crackdown across Minneapolis. The peer steering assisted dying legislation through the House of Lords says it is in real danger of running out of time. Former Justice Secretary Lord Falconer is accusing its opponents of tabling 1,000 amendments with the aim of running the clock down. Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson told LBC they have to be sure the bill is safe.
The two doctors settled which 6-month diagnosis sounds really simple. You know, we're told there won't be any coercion. And that's not real. It's just not. So if we're going to do this, we have to do more than this in the current bill. The current bill is just beyond vague.
And Emma Raducanu is split with her 8th tennis coach in 5 years. Francisco Rodge will no longer work with the British number one after she exited the Australian Open in the second round. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 17 points at 10,171. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain continuing to move north-eastwards tomorrow. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest. Highs of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's just gone 10 o'clock. Hello there. A very, very good evening indeed to you this Thursday night. Late nights with Ben Kentish here on LBC for the next 3 hours. And it's a pleasure to have you company this evening. On tonight's show,
it's thousands you're saving. It's not a couple of quid. It is thousands. We're in a cost of living crisis. People cannot afford the money out of their wage to take their kids on holiday.
The number of parents being fined for taking their children out of school during term time has hit another record high today. But is that a sign of a country that just doesn't value education anymore? Or is it just a result of a cost of living crisis? And should parents really face financial penalties just for wanting a family holiday? Talk about that after 11. Plus,
I feel the sense of dread I felt cycling to school and walking in every day. It was the most painful and horrendous few years of my life, without doubt. I was so sad and lots of tears with my mum and dad trying to solve the problem.
Broadcaster Jake Humphrey tells me about the impact that being bullied at school had on his life. I'll be asking about how experiencing bullying has impacted yours. And why one NHS trust has called in an exorcist, yes, an exorcist, to come and help it out with a paranormal problem at a Norfolk hospice. Details later.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
But I want to start the show tonight by talking about the growing outrage at what young graduates in this country are being asked to pay for a university education that everybody else that went before them pretty much got for free. The backlash against Rachel Reeves' decision to freeze the threshold at which graduates have to start paying back their student loans has grown today, and it will only continue to. This is a totemic, symbolic issue for an entire generation of university graduates who see it as another example, and they're right to, of how the political class and the leaders that govern this country use them as a cash cow and don't care about their interests at all. Students are being hit with eye-watering interest rates, up to 9% in some cases. Not by some dodgy high street payday lender, but by the government of this country. A government with a Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, who insisted here on LBC yesterday that that system is fair. Now, we talked on the programme last night about student loans, whether they work, whether they're fair, how they could be how they could be improved, how the system could be reformed for the better. And pretty much everybody who got in touch said, no, of course it's not fair. Of course, hitting young people with debts of £9,500 a year just for the fees, and then interest rates of up to 9%, interest that continues to accrue whether or not you're actually studying, whether you're ill, whether you're on maternity leave, whether you're on bereavement leave, whether you're in a low-paid job or high-paid job, the interest goes up and up and up and up. It is an absolute scandal. It's the sort of thing we should be talking about endlessly until somebody like Rachel Reeves, with the ability to do something about it, actually does something about it. It should, if you ask me, be the top story on every news bulletin today. It should be on the front page of every single newspaper, because it is that outrageous and that scandalous that, and it will soon be, millions of young graduates are being squeezed like to the oblivion by the government of this country, and asked to cough up money that most of them simply can't afford. And it would be a national scandal if this was being done to any other generation at all. It would be front page news. It would be all over TV and radio. But because it's young people, it isn't. Not a word about it from most UK media outlets. Nothing. Zilch. The fact that students are being forced to pay thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pounds in interest, that somebody who went to university even 5 years, 1 year earlier, would not have to pay? Not worthy of attention, apparently. And that's what I want to talk about this hour. Why do young people get so little support with this stuff from older generations? Why does nobody seem to care when it's them that has been the victim of a government cock-up or a government injustice? Graduates are paying money they cannot afford, and they are accruing more and more interest every single day, even if they are within jobs that pay barely more than the national minimum wage. It's a scam, with younger victims, younger people as the victims, and our government as the perpetrator. Last night, even, the Money Saving Expert founder, Martin Lewis, called it a breach of national justice, and it clearly is, and young people know it, which is why they are so exercised about this. And yet, I say again, almost nobody else is talking about it. And it's hard to avoid the conclusion, I think, when it comes to this almighty con, this daylight robbery of young people, that nobody really seems to care. Because you can't just blame the media. You can't blame the newspaper editors or the columnists. You can't just blame the politicians. They respond to what the public wants and thinks. And if there was mass public outrage about what is being done to this generation of young university graduates, then it would be front page news. Then it would be on the television news bulletins. It would be being talked about. People would be writing columns about it. But because there is no pressure from the rest of the public, older generations, the media ignores it and the politicians do too. So it's not just on the media class and the political class. It's on everybody who just thinks, oh, well, yeah. It's probably out of order, isn't it? Those young people having to pay £250,000 on a loan of 50 grand, but bigger things to worry about, aren't there? That's the attitude in this country, across the board. And I want to know why. Why do young people get so little concern when they are being ripped off? Why do they get so little support with this stuff from older generations? As I say, we talked about it on the show last night, and we heard from two callers in particular who I think illustrated the scale of the problem. The first was Solicitor Kieran,
I was a law graduate and I'm now a qualified solicitor. Over the life of the loan, I'd be paying around, you know, £250,000.
For a three-year degree, you know, that Rachel Reeves paid £3,000 for.
£50,000 loan in total. You know, I have absolutely no complaints about paying for my tuition fees.
You pay the £27,000 happily, but you don't want to pay £250,000 because of the interest rates. And then we heard from a nurse, Elliot.
I'm a registered nurse. I finished my studies a couple of years ago, and my student debt is over £100,000. It's pretty insane.
£100,000?
Yes. So the reason mine ended up so high, so I was studying during the pandemic, and it happened, you know, really broke out badly during my third year. And I was working for a care home group at the time, and I decided, you know what, actually, the right thing for me to do is step back, use my skills where I'm needed, and I worked with a regional team there in responding to the COVID outbreak. And because of that, you know, I had to step away from uni for that year, take a gap year, and all this time, you know, from the second you start studying, the interest is accruing. And so by the time I've gone back, paid for the extra year, and qualified, you know, I checked my balance, and it's just over £100,000. But it's just indefensible.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a ridiculous sum of money, isn't it? And you're being penalised for doing the right thing and trying to help people, effectively.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, I calculated it at the interest rate at the time. I would have to be earning about £80,000 just to break even on the interest payments.
So you've got nurses being penalised by the government for daring to take time out of their studies to help with the COVID response. You've got young, hardworking Elliot having to pay back £250,000 over the lifetime to the government for a loan that he took out for £50,000. How is that fair? Answer, it isn't. And given that it isn't, and I think most people accept that it isn't, why does nobody seem to care? Why is nobody talking about this? And let's just contrast this, shall we, for a moment. Let's just contrast the thousands upon thousands of thousands of pounds that young graduates are being asked to pay to the government, unfairly and unjustly, with the almighty row, the weeks of outrage and frothing at the mouth when the government dared to try to take away £200 in winter fuel payments from wealthier pensioners. Wall-to-wall coverage on TV and radio, countless hours of debate. Newspaper columns everywhere you look, front page after front page after front page. That was £200. You had politicians clamouring over each other to see who could talk about it the most and condemn it in the strongest possible terms. Exactly the same when the Chancellor asked people with farms worth more than £1.5 million to pay a bit of inheritance tax. Outrage. The media went crazy. So did the rest. So did the government's political opponents. You couldn't look left or right or centre to see somebody protesting and shouting about it. But when it's young people not being deprived of £200, but of thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of pounds of interest on loans that are worth a fraction of that amount for an education that their parents and grandparents' generation got for free, nothing. No outrage, really, apart from the young people themselves and one or two people, commendable people like Martin Lewis, who are standing up for them. From the newspapers, nothing. From the columnists, nothing. From the television news bulletins, not a word. From the political class, shrug of the shoulders. And the general public, the people of this country, older generations, just don't care. Don't care. Not interested. No sympathy, no solidarity, no support for young people being ripped off by the government. Why? Why is that the case? Why do you think young people get so little support from older generations? Because when that winter fuel payment change was made, by the way, I had young person after young person calling this show saying, this is outrageous. This is my grandma. This is my granddad. They can't afford it. This is shocking. And when it's the other way around, nothing. Absolutely nothing whatsoever. And when we talk about things like the winter fuel payments or the triple lot, God forbid, people say, you'll be old once, Ben. Have a bit of sympathy. Have a bit of understanding and compassion, and I hope I will be old once, and I do have sympathy and compassion, but it's got to work both ways, doesn't it? If you think that the older people are not getting enough support on those issues from the young, then my goodness, the young are not getting anywhere near enough support when they're being ripped off by the Chancellor from anybody, frankly. And I want to know why you think that is. I'm really genuinely interested in what's going on here. Why is there so little regard and so little concern for the plight of this generation of people in their early, mid, late 20s and the graduates of tomorrow as well. Is it just self-interest? People are sort of stressed. There's a lot to worry about at the moment. People can't afford to think too far out their own sort of horizons. Is it simply that? Is it willful ignorance? Do people just not really understand or haven't bothered to try to understand what's actually going on here? Or is there something more malicious about it? Is there something more malicious? Because actually, it works for everybody else if young people are having to pay through the teeth in quantities and sums of money they can't afford, because that means older people don't have to pay as much. And I get stick when I point out that actually the billions that Rachel Reeves is making by asking people on £28,000 a year to pay 9% interest on their student loans, well, that's money that she doesn't have to cut the triple lock. That means she can maintain the gold-plated pensions, the public sector pensions that are costing this country tens of billions of pounds. I mean, call me cynical, but that has got to be part of it, hasn't it? And if it's not that, what is it? Why is there so little support from older generations for the young graduates that are going through or being victims of a government-enacted scam, as I see it? Don't take my words for it. I'm not an expert on this stuff. Martin Lewis, the man who probably knows more in this country, more than anyone in this country, about how this system works and whether or not it's fair, said it is a travesty of justice last night. He says it's not moral what this Chancellor is doing to young graduates in this country. So take his word for it if you won't take mine. And still nothing. Barely a word. Why? 0345 6060 973. If you're young yourself, do you recognise that kind of just complete lack of regard for your plight? And it's not just student fees. There was barely a word when the youth centres were closed or the tuition fees were trebled or the jobs were lost. All the other changes that have been made that affect young people. Barely a word from the media or the political class. Nothing. All the rest of the public, let's be honest here. Do you recognise that picture? And why do you think it is? And if you are a little bit older, however old you are, why do you think your generation, might not be you, this doesn't apply to everybody, but why do you think your generation, your generations, cares so little about young people being treated in this way by the government? 0345 6060 973, the number for your thoughts on that. You can call or WhatsApp that number, text me on 84850, or say Alexa, send a comment to LBC. And people will say it's the media, it's the politician. Fine, that's part of it. But politicians and the media, I say it again, respond to the public. And there is so little public support and solidarity and sympathy for young people right now that they don't need to respond to it because it doesn't exist. And if it did exist, if there was a little bit more compassion and understanding, it would be on the front pages and it would be being raised in Parliament. So it's on, I think, the whole country to do more to stand by our young people. And I want to know why you think it's not happening already. 0345 6060 973, your thoughts just after this.
This is LBC.
Bring your pensions together into one easy-to-manage online plan with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
A Southern Train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
1019, lots of your calls coming in. Why do young people get... And it's not just about student loans, this. This is true across the board. Every time there is an issue that disproportionately harms or affects young people, it gets virtually no discussion, conversation, media coverage, regard, concern, sympathy, support. Call it what you want, nothing. Nobody cares, to put it short, to put it mildly. Why? Why are young people getting so little support from older generations on student loans and all the other issues that they face? Daniel's a new caller tonight in Croydon. Daniel, welcome.
How you doing?
I'm good, sir. Thank you. Fire away.
I just think my generation's just being completely ripped off. And I think that's what it's going to be till people my age are the politicians. I just checked my student debt then, and it's gone up to 99,000 from about 54 when I left uni in 2019. And I think by the time I'm in my 60s or 70s, the state pension's not going to exist. So I'm just funding the older generation, and I'm not going to see any of that in the future.
So you borrowed 55, Daniel, just to be clear, and you're going to, as things stand, and this will go up even more, you're going to have to pay back £100,000.
I think that's right, yeah. I think it's about 54 by the time I left uni, then I got a postgraduate, and then it's kind of mental, the fact that no one does care about it, and no one, you know, like you said a moment ago about the farmers, you know, they're being asked to pay a little bit more when the farm's worth 1.5 million. But
yeah, there's been more outrage, infinitely more outrage about people with farms worth £1.5 million being asked to pay a little bit of inheritance tax than there has about young graduates earning 28 grand having to pay tens and tens of thousands of pounds, like yourself, just in interest, to the Chancellor. I mean, how do you explain that, Daniel? The fact that nobody seems to care?
I just think it's because there's less of us. There's less young people, there's less, 30-year-olds than there are 60-year-olds at the
still
moment.
Millions,
when you look
millions
at
of young people. You know, if all those young people got together and voted en masse, they would hold the balance of power in an election.
Well, I just think that then you're looking at issues with the electoral system, because with first past the post, that's never going to happen. The only parties that are really talking about it are the Lib Dems, who are partly responsible for it, and the Greens. And, you know, I vote Green, and I don't see them being close to power for another 20 years by the time I'm going to be 50. And God knows what my debt's going to look like then.
How do you feel about it? How do you feel about the fact that, you know, you in good faith borrowed £55,000 from the government to do what the government told you to do and go to university, and you might end up paying £150,000 back?
Just screwed over. Genuinely, that's the only way to describe it. Is I feel like also we were missold it. We were never really, I mean, maybe we should have read into it more, but, you know, you're in sixth form and they're like, apply to uni. Mm. So you do. And then it weren't even until a few years after I left uni that I was kind of like, whoa, this interest is a bit mad. I kind of think we've been missold and then just screwed over afterwards.
The funny thing is, Daniel, if this was some sort of, you know, big, high-profile payday lender company, you would have Labour MPs queuing up to stand up in Parliament to say, this is disgraceful. They are ripping off hard, decent, hard-working young people for the sake of profit and monetary, you know, and sort of profiteering. But when it's their own government that is doing it to young people, they've got nothing to say, most of them. We tried to get some of them to come on tonight, some of the Labour MPs of that generation. None of them wanted to do it. Silence.
I think that's just because they don't... Current Labour government don't really care. That they're currently scrambling just to try and stay in power. Mm. Keir Starmer's doing as many U-turns as possible to appeal to reform when he's losing votes to the left more than he's losing votes to the right. So Morgan McSweeney and, you know, all his political knowledge is just a bit rubbish, and they just don't care. I just think the current Labour government don't care, and it's not.
But do you think any government has cared in recent years?
Oh, no, I don't even think, going back to, when Tony Blair, I don't even think he really cared that much.
I honestly don't think there's been a government that's cared about young people for decades, ever. I don't know. What was the last government? Who's the last prime minister that genuinely seemed to go out of their way to try and make life better for young people in this country? If someone got an answer to that, I don't have one. I can't remember one in my lifetime. Daniel, lovely to have you with us for the first time. Thank you very much, Neil, for getting in touch tonight. Finn's another brand new caller tonight in Falmouth. Welcome to you as well, Finn. Evening.
Hi there, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, Finn, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm a first-year undergrad, so of all the conversation you've been having with other people around the country, I'm going into the thick of it now. And so I thought I'd offer some of my thoughts going through this system, applying to university, and even just looking on the outset, there's a real misconception as to what student loans really are. I'll just highlight for some of your viewers who might not be familiar, but there are actually two types of student loan. One's the actual tuition fee loan, so that's $9,500 for 3 years. That's a straight loan. But there's a maintenance loan, which used to be a grant until Mr. Osborne replaced it 10 years ago.
Good old George Osborne, fan.
That loan is money that people on middle and lower incomes really desperately need because they use it for rent, to get by every day. And immediately, those on the lower income are already at a disadvantage before they even graduate. Mm-hmm. So in terms of paying back the loan, people on lower incomes are so disadvantaged, and that they're really, I know you've spoken about what more can be done for young people. I feel like, where's our patriotism gone? Patriotism should be helping out the next generation of taxpayers.
Yep.
Because if you want this triple paid for, it's a bit overpassed, it's a bloody...
Or Finn, your line's gone slightly dodgy.
I'll put it there.
That's a bit
better.
Yeah,
I was just saying, if it's, where's our patriotism gone? Patriotism shouldn't be waving your flag around, shouting at immigrants for being here. It should be helping the next generation. And I find it completely, almost outrageous that young people are sort of being treated as...
Yes, it would just, Finn, let's just try and get your line sorted. But you're right. For me, patriotism is about building a better country for the next generation. And for the first time, I think, ever, this generation of adults, this generation of older people, will be the first that cannot say they've done that. That the country they are leaving behind for people of Finn's age and Daniel's age and those that come after is worse for them, for young people today, than it was when their parents were growing up. And that doesn't seem to register. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe the reason that young people get so little support from older generations is because there is a sense of guilt. That it's easier just to ignore the fact that we are making life worse for today's young people for the very, very first time than it was when their parents were growing up. Maybe there is a sense of embarrassment about that that means we all just sort of would rather stick our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening while they tell us, like Finn's doing, very, very clearly that it is. Let's try and get Finn back on a slightly better line. Let's talk to another first-time caller tonight, Belinda in Stratford-upon-Avon. Hi, Belinda.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to say well done for bringing this up. This is an emotional response because I'm a mum and I've got a 23-year-old and a 25-year-old. They're both out of uni. They both got good jobs and that wasn't easy. And they're both on about 30K. So they're doing well. Mm. I'm very proud of them. When they came home at Christmas, one night my 25-year-old and I were up later just chatting. And I was talking about the good old days in the 80s when I was their age and how I bought my first house. Well, I left school. It was, if you could call it a school, it was a comp and it wasn't very good. 17, straight into work. Bought my first house at 21 just from saving up. I was also able to get a bank loan to buy a car, but I'd already saved and bought one. But that went towards the deposit. So you could lie a little bit in those days, you know. I was really proud of what I had done until he started crying. He's 25. He's only ever cried twice in my memory. Once when he was bullied badly at school, and once when he broke up with his first girlfriend and he started crying. And when he finished, we talked and he said he felt everything so hopeless and stacked against them. Mm. He doesn't think he'll ever find a way to buy a house to save. Both my boys are in London. That's their choice. Stratford's a long way from, you know, jobs. They've got a rental with another mate, and so that's £1,000 each a month out of their 30,000. I mean, it's just, it's heartbreaking. And these are the sort of conversations we should be having, because these kids, they've got it stacked against them, and it is the government. And I'm very apolitical because I'm a vegetarian, and I just think every one of them is a meat, you know? You're starving. What do you have, sausage, bacon or steak? None of them are starved.
Belinda, I hear you, but it strikes me it's not just the government, because if there were more people like you from your generation and older generations as well saying what you've just said and feeling it the way you do and being as passionate about the plight of young people as you clearly are, then the government would have to listen. And the newspapers would start writing about it because people would start buying it. And the television news bulletins would start covering it because people would want to watch it. But, I mean, you tell me, do you think that your generation, unless they're directly affected like you are as a mum, do you think they care?
I can only relate to a decision to come out of Europe, which I didn't want us to. It was older people that, for whatever reason, didn't. I'm 63. I'm still full-time work. I started today at 8 o'clock and I finished about an hour ago.
Wow.
I worked very hard because I had nothing, even though I bought my own house, unfortunately, because of the partner I chose. I ended up with nothing. But that I don't know what to do. Do I write to the Daily Mail? Is it a campaign that LBC can start? I'd sign up. I'd get all my mates to.
Would they be up for it, do you think? Because my worry is, and I don't want to disparage your lovely friends, Belinda, but actually, when you talk to most people who aren't either young graduates or, like yourself, parents of young graduates about this, they go, oh, yeah, that's bad, isn't it? Nice weather today. Yeah, lovely weather today. No, it's just not the concern. They get angry about the winter fuel payments. 200 quid off grandma. God, that's outrageous. 50 grand off the 23, your 23-year-old son. Oh, well, yeah, but, you know, didn't have to go to university, did he? There's just this complete sort of lack of empathy almost.
They're just
for your children's generation.
Yeah, I would start anything. I can't speak.
Well,
that type
I think
of
you're doing all you can, Belinda. You're caring. And that's a hell of a lot more, frankly, than a lot of people in this country are doing right now about your children and the many, many others like them. Thank you, Belinda. You take care of yourself. Belinda, first-time caller in Stratford-upon-Avon. Of course, people text in, and I'm 84, and of course I think it's disgraceful. Of course some people do. But if more people who are 84 or 74 or 64, or even 44, frankly, cared about Belinda's children and the many millions of others in the same situation, then maybe something would get done about it. Or at the very least, even if nothing got done about it, maybe we'd even be talking about it. And at least they'd feel some solidarity. At least they wouldn't feel like they were fighting these battles completely alone, with no support whatsoever from older generations, which is how young people feel. And I get why they do, because generally that's what they're doing. Yeah, I'm talking about this. You find other young journalists talking about it. When was the last time you heard a newspaper columnist in their 60s? Or, you know, someone of the old generation started banging on about this. We don't do it. When it's pensioners that are being robbed of their winter fuel payments, the whole country comes together in outrage. When it's young graduates that are being robbed by paying 9% interest, tens and thousands of pounds in interest to Rachel Reeves, the rest of the country goes, oh, well, yeah, never mind. More recalls to come on that in just a moment. Why do young people get so little sympathy and so little support from older generations? Plus,
in the NHS, we have about 13,500 preventable deaths every year.
It's been a very bad day, must be said, for the NHS today. It's been found to be worse than Sudan for causing patient deaths, and LBC has uncovered the true scale of sexual assaults taking place in hospitals. We'll look more at both of those stories just after news headlines at 10:32 with Darrell Jackson.
The Metropolitan Police will review a report into a surgeon after it found 94 children suffered harm at his hands at Great Ormond Street Hospital. Yazza Jabbar treated hundreds of patients between 2017 and 2022. The government's just announced that millions of families will receive the Warm Home discount for the rest of the decade. Eligible households will continue to get £150 off their energy bills until 2031. And women who claim they weren't told about changes to their pension age say they're considering legal action after being denied compensation. The government says a redress scheme for the so-called WASPI women wouldn't be practical. LBC weather, rain continuing to move northeastwards tomorrow. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest. Highs of 11 degrees.
LBC, coming up on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast, Donald Trump's border czar says he's not surrendering the mission in Minneapolis, just doing it Sparta. Nick will speak live with a local resident. Plus, nearly 100 children were harmed by a Great Ormond Street hospital surgeon. Nick will be joined by the mother of one of the victims. And as Keir Starmer secures a deal on visa-free travel to China, will you be packing your bags? All that and more coming up. Nick Ferrari at Breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 o'clock here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. LBC.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Text 84850.
10:36 the time. Jane says on WhatsApp, it's completely outrageous what's happening to young graduates. I have two sons with hefty loans. The government is milking these young people. It is a huge scam, says Jane. I couldn't agree more, Jane. So how do we explain the contrast? How do we explain the difference between the national outrage when wealthier pensioners were set to lose £200 a year in winter fuel payments, and everybody couldn't blink. You couldn't turn away for a moment without hearing endless coverage of it, an outrage everywhere you looked. How do you explain the contrast between that and the fact that young graduates, as Jane says, are being scammed out of tens of thousands of pounds by the government and nobody bats an eyelid? How do you explain that? A country that just cares so little about the plight of the younger generations. Why is that the case? 03456060973. Talk to Robbie in Liverpool about that in just a moment. First, though, more on the exclusive news revealed by LBC today that 12,000 reports of alleged sexual assault were recorded in NHS hospitals across the UK over the past 5 years. That's a 75% increase since 2020. LBC's reporter Helen Hodnott has the exclusive, and please be aware that her report contains references to sexual assault.
When he was right in front of me, he suddenly pulled down his mask and he kissed me on the lips.
27-year-old Charlotte Mensah is a sickle cell patient who spends long periods of time in hospital, racked with pain.
When I'm in hospital, I literally am unable to get out of bed for at least 5 or 6 days.
Around 4 years ago, she was repeatedly sexually assaulted by a 44-year-old cleaner at Hammersmith Hospital. She's waived her right to anonymity to tell us her story.
He came into my room when I was changing. I was topless, and he didn't leave, and he started stroking my face and my body, arms and legs.
Charlotte says that even after reporting it to staff, they took 6 months to remove the cleaner from his role.
I came across him again in a different part of the hospital when I was going for an x-ray, which was really scary because now he saw me. He knew exactly where I was staying. So he could have snuck back onto the ward to come and assault me again anytime he wanted.
Following the collapse of police proceedings, Charlotte pursued a civil case and was awarded £7,000 by Hammersmith Hospital, which has acknowledged they didn't get everything right in this case, saying they've strengthened their processes for responding to allegations of sexual assault since then. But what happened to Charlotte is shockingly common. Our figures suggest that more than 46 sexual assaults in hospitals are reported every week, with 5% of those carried out by NHS staff.
The NHS is one of the largest employers in the entire country.
Joe Phoenix is a criminology professor at the University of Reading who has carried out extensive research into this issue. She told me our figures are unsurprising.
And of course, it's not just employees in the NHS, we've got patients. So we have these institutions that are intimate spaces that probably have hundreds of thousands of people going through them every single year. So why we would think that sexual violence wouldn't happen in spaces like that is a little bit perhaps naive.
There are now calls for hospitals to improve safeguarding procedures, including more single-sex wards, stronger supervision, open-door policies, and bans on staff working alone with vulnerable patients. A government spokesperson said healthcare leaders must take robust action to stamp out sexual misconduct and keep staff and patients safe.
Hello, not with that report. Let's talk about it with Dr. Nick Mann, GP and member of the Keep Our NHS Public campaign. Nick, very good evening to you. Your response to those pretty shocking figures that Helen was just revealing?
Yeah, they are really shocking, but not surprising. There are inadequate sanctions. A lot of the violence is perpetrated by patients on staff. About 60% is perpetrated by patients, and about another 20% is patients on patients. And yes, the mixed sex wards and the lack of sanctions available to women, and it is mostly women by a long way, that are subjected to this. And the trusts essentially just do an investigation and then kind of it all gets patted down again. And we don't have government prosecutions, government-ordained prosecutions against healthcare workers for sexual assault particularly. I mean, the violence generally is pretty hideous and rising in hospitals. But, you know, sexual assault is a particular category that really should be available for prosecution.
It's a far more robust response by the NHS and the government by the sounds of it. As it sounds like, Nick, does the fact that it's been revealed today the NHS has a higher death rate from harm caused by medical treatment even than Sudan? What's going on?
Well, if I can come back onto this and talk about why on earth Jeremy Hunt is proselytising and taking part in the report in this, I might be able to flesh some of that out. I mean, from 2000 up to about 2010, we were number one in the Commonwealth Fund ranking. And that sort of went off a cliff it went progressively off from about 2010. So things were stable, we had low figures, and then things got bad pretty quickly. And that, you know, now we have the situation with the Royal College of Emergency Medicine research showing that 16,600 patients are dying avoidably, unnecessarily and avoidably as a result of delays to emergency.
Is this about funding, Nick?
Well, it is largely about funding and the infrastructure that supports that. And what I'd like to say particularly, I heard on LBC this morning, Jeremy Hunt was saying, well, you know, it's not all about funding, he said, because Norway has less funding, blah, blah, blah. Well, he's wrong. And I don't know whether he's deliberately wrong or he's just some kind of other prevarication, but Norway has 40% more than our per capita funding.
to health, 40% more. And you look at the numbers of beds per thousand, you look at the number, which is like 60% more, you look at the number of doctors per thousand, there's, I can't remember the figure, it's about 30% more. It's, you know, these things actually matter.
It comes back to money. It comes back to money, as it always does, and there's not enough of it in the NHS right now. Nick, thank you very much indeed. That's Dr. Nick, Dr. Nick Mann, GP and member of the Keep Our NHS Public campaign. Let's talk to Mark in Woking. Mark, coming back to our conversation about why young people get so little support from your older generations, despite being ripped off when it comes to student loans by the government. What do you think?
I think you're not going to like this. The older generation are living longer than previous older generations.
That's true.
Which means, I mean, I didn't get any inheritance till I was 60 plus, the same as my wife, by which time, of course, it's not so necessary. But when my wife and I got married, one of, I think she'd lost two grandparents recently, and we basically inherited enough to give us a deposit on the mortgage.
Right. How does this affect why there's so little support for your generation of the young, Mark?
For generation of 20-year-olds now.
Yeah, why do you think there's so little sympathy for that generation?
I don't think it's lack of sympathy. What's happened with the most recent generation in our family is they've gone on and on and on. Then they've spent some years in
how does this affect young people today?
Well, if when I was a young person, a lot of people were getting inheritance when they were young.
People living longer means that young people don't get the inheritance, which is a good thing. Of course, it's a good thing that people are living longer, but they shouldn't have to rely on inheritance. The state should, when it comes to things like education, the state should be providing it rather than just using graduates as a cash cow, shouldn't it?
I have to be careful what I say here. I didn't go to university, and when I was a young person, I was very envious that some people, back then, a graduate was seen as gold dust.
And now
everyone goes, and there is basically grade inflation.
And the government's seen an opportunity to make an awful lot of money off the back of it. Billions and billions of pounds more than it was making even a few years ago. Rachel Reeves reckons it's fair. Do you think it is it fair? No one else seems to think it's fair, but if it isn't, if it is this injustice, if it's the moral failure, the morally indefensible policy that Martin Lewis described it as yesterday, then where's the outrage? Where's the solidarity? Where are the marches? The farmers turned up. The pensioners marched through London. Don't take our £200 away. We need it. Where's the protest? Where's the support for the students and the graduates? There isn't any, is there? Mark, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. More calls to come just after this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Please, you remember this ban? Now it is to be extended to, it would appear, cafes as well, as was indicated yesterday. So let's turn to Tom Splanders, who's owner of Wild and Ginger Cafe in Bournemouth. What the Chancellor did, what did it mean to you and your wife's business?
The reality last year for my wife and I is my wife was able to pay herself about £5 an hour. And the business rates implications following the budget were that we are exposed to additional £4,000 in business rates. So whilst my wife was able to pay herself £15,000, say, that's just another £4,000 we need to find before we're able to pay ourselves.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. After National Protected.
subject to availability and conditions.
John Light's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sun Life Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackie's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 10 to 11. We are talking about why there's so little support and sympathy and solidarity for young graduates being ripped off by the government when it comes to these eye-watering student loans that force them to pay back far more than they ever borrowed in the first place. Where's the concern? Why is nobody talking about this? Robbie's talking about it in Liverpool. Robbie, you picked up the phone to talk about it. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Ben. Whereas I do agree that the system seems a little bit stacked up against the youth, I have very little sympathy. I'm probably one of your the people who you're thinking about. I'm early 60s, and I live in a university town. I see the students, and to be honest, there's little sympathy from me because they don't help themselves. The amount of money that they waste and spend is massive. You've only got to, there's a few things, but you've only got to go in. It's not just Freshers Week, you know, where they all go crazy. You go into Liverpool and it's full of students and they're spending.
What are they spending it on, Robert?
They're spending it on booze. Right. They're spending it in restaurants. The number of restaurants in the student areas, and takeaways. Nobody, you know, when you think back to people in my generation, now I didn't go to university, my brother did. I had two daughters who are now in their 30s. They went to uni. But
and they never went out for a drink, did they, when they were in
They were very frugal.
Didn't eat
with their
restaurants.
No, well...
Robbie, do we want to be a country that resents students for going out for a drink? Is that where we've got to as a country?
No, you don't need to go to the extreme, Ben.
You resent students for eating in restaurants and having a drink and a night out.
If it was just a night out, one night every now and then, fair all enough. Right. But it's not. It's not. You know, I live in Liverpool. I'm in the town centre occasionally. Yeah. And every time I go, it is. Or you go during the day. But one of the other things, which is stacked against the kids, it's just stacked against them, is that the contact time actually in uni is so small. Ben.
Yeah, that is some of part of the problem, Robbie. But also part of the problem is people like yourself having a pop at them and resenting them for wanting to go out and have a good time when they're young. Why? No, that's not the sort. Turn into the sort of country that says students shouldn't be going out for a bit of dinner or a few drinks with their mates? Why? When did we become a country that's so sort of callous towards young people?
That's not what I'm talking about.
It's absolutely not what you're talking about.
I wanted to tell you something else because I've got experience in this because of my job that I did.
Right.
But a lot of the accommodation as well is stacked up against them because it's beautiful. Every available building is now being turned into students' accommodation. But it's expensive because it's beautiful.
It's all stacked up against them. But Robbie, just on the point about wasting money, I mean, what about the people getting winter fuel payments, 400 quid a year of taxpayers' money? While they're on a four-week Caribbean cruise. What about that? Does that annoy you in the same way?
No, well, it does. It does, actually. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about students wasting money, aren't we? If students go to university, they go with their eyes open. These are the next generation of people who are going for good jobs and everything. So they go in with their eyes open. They realise that if you take out this debt, if you take the maximum, okay, you're going to have to pay it back. So use it wisely.
But, Robbie, the consequence is more and more of them, you're right, just will say, well, they'll hear the call we had from Elliot and from Kieran earlier saying, well, I took out a 50 grand loan and I'm going to have to pay back £250,000. And they're still clear. And then we're going to wonder why we've got a shortage of doctors and nurses and other qualified people, because nobody's going to want to go to university because this government and the ones that went before have turned it into a con. It's a scam. And I hear what you're saying, but, you know, come on, are we in that context, when we're talking about a lack of sympathy, are we really going to say, well, you know, but it's because they're going for a few beers on a Friday night. Come on, let's have a little bit of compassion. Since the God knows when students have enjoyed a bit of a social life, that's the whole joy of being young. You know, they don't get to do it for long. They'll be paying rent of £2,000 a month by the time they're 21. And now we want to have a moan at them because they're going out and enjoying themselves when they're 18. I hear the other points you're making, but I just think that is, as you say, respectfully, that I think that's a sign of the problem in this country right now. It's a lot punching down of young people. Thank you, Robbie, though, for the call. We appreciate it, as always. Adam's in Cambridge. Adam, evening.
Hiya. How you doing?
I'm good, Adam. Your thoughts on this? What's going on?
Well, I'm currently finishing off a degree, actually, at the moment. It's my second degree. I've done one when I was younger, at the age of 20. And even then, when they just brought in the fees, and it was, I think it's about £1,250, and it's just rising, which I know seems cheap now, but even then I struggled. Now, when I went back to do this degree, I got no support whatsoever, and the only reason I got through was because I literally had student welfare helping me. And what I've noticed, students going now, with these huge amounts of debt being laid on them, they're not going out drinking like the last caller was saying. Most of them barely go out at all, and when they do, they're going for the cheap options. Most of them just buy some drinks if they want them and have them in their halls, which are extortionate anyway.
Because they know that they're already going to be saddled with £50,000, £60,000, £70,000 of debt when they leave.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is a lot of the older generations had free university.
Yep.
Are now saying, well, yeah, of course you do that. You're doing Mickey Mouse degrees. Well, most degrees are not Mickey Mouse anyway.
Yep. Yeah, Robbie's generation that got it all for free, got the university education for free, and now wants to have a moan at students for going out for a few drinks on the weekend. I mean, it's,
exactly.
Where do you think that comes from, Adam? That just kind of complete, I mean, it is a sort of callousness, isn't it, really? Just a complete sort of disregard for young people. Behind it?
I hate to say it, I think a lot of it comes from the government spin on basically saying students are doing Mickey Mouse degrees, it's lazy, they don't need them, why aren't they going out working?
Yeah.
Well, most jobs, unlike back then, need degrees to even go on an entry level. Yes. You can get an entry level job or an apprentice and work your way up in a company.
Yep.
Most companies, as my stepson now, he needs a degree just to go into the very bottom level of a computing company.
It's crazy. And that's because the government told young people to go to university. So they did. And then people turn around and say, why are you all going to university? Because the government told us we should. 50%, wasn't it? That was the target. Thank you, Adam. Good to have you on the show tonight. David's in Burton upon Trent. David, why do you think young people get so little support with all of this stuff?
Well, I'd just like to start with caveat, I'm not a young person.
That's allowed.
But yeah, I've come out of university with £137, £294.44 debt. So I started uni in 2014. I had to come off due to my son having sepsis, so I was off uni for about 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Went back on. Completed my degree, completed in 2024. The undergrad bill is $123,000, and then I've got my postgrad, which is $13,000, which I've had to come off because of military PTSD.
Oh, David.
And
you pay interest and all that as well?
Yeah.
What's the interest rate?
3.2%.
It's less than some, but it's still a decent chunk. How do you feel about it? Or how do you feel about the system that's left you with getting on for £150,000 of debt?
Well, after leaving the army, I haven't even started earning yet.
So your interest is going up and up and up and up?
Yeah. I'm on 137 grand at the minute.
Rachel Reeve says that's fair, that system, that's saddled you with 150, 37 grand of debt. Said that yesterday.
Rachel Reeves.
The system is fair.
Well, I mean, to me, I'd just like to say, shame on her. Absolute shame on her for coming out and saying that.
Yeah, I mean, David, I can't argue with you at all. It's a shameful thing to say. From a Labour Chancellor, who's supposed to be on the side of people like yourself, right?
Supposed to be.
Supposed to be, but clearly isn't. But also thinks the triple lock is fair. It's fair to just keep throwing hundreds of pounds a year at people, whether they're all, they need it. That's fair, says Rachel Reeves. Who's going to pay for it? Those young graduates on minimum wage jobs, pretty much, who are paying 9% interest rates. Or David, who's not even started earning yet, and is going to have to pay back, as it stands today, £137,000. Far more than he actually borrowed in the first place. We'll keep talking a bit about this. Why do young people get so little concern and support from the media, from the political class and the rest of the public? But other matters to turn to as well. Namely, the number of parents getting fined for taking their kids on holiday.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Great Ormond Street Hospitals apologised after more than 90 children came to harm at the hands of one of its surgeons. Yasser Jabbar treated hundreds of patients between 2017 and 2022. Many were left in pain and in need of further surgery. A report has found his approach to clinical care, which involved lower limb reconstruction, was highly inconsistent. Matthew Shaws, the hospital's chief executive.
What I want to say to the families is there is no corporate cardboard apology here. What has happened to these children at this hospital is unacceptable and it is awful. Yasser Jabbar's practice was completely unacceptable.
A teenager will be sentenced in February after pleading guilty to the murder of a 12-year-old boy in Birmingham. Leo Ross was stabbed in a park in Hall Green last January. Detective Inspector Joe Davenport told LBC the boy who stabbed Leo also attacked three elderly people in the same park.
He was 14 at the time he carried out these crimes and he's 15 now. He doesn't know Leo. He doesn't know any of the other victims. He made no effort to try and rob them. There appears to be no other motivation for the attack other than a need to carry out acts of violence.
The government's announced that millions of families will receive the Warm Home discount for the rest of the decade. Eligible households will continue to get £150 off their energy bills until 2031. And in Scotland, qualifying families will get their discount automatically instead of having to apply for it. Energy Minister Martin McCluskey told LBC the affordability crisis is the biggest priority for the government.
The cost of energy is just far, far too high for people. So we want to make sure that we're providing people with the certainty of support right out to 2031 through the end of this decade. And that's going to be £150 off through the Warm Home discount. And that's on top of the £150 off of energy costs that's coming in April.
Democrats in the US Senate have blocked a wide-ranging spending bill over the deployment of immigration agents. They'd threatened to do so, demanding Donald Trump reins in his immigration crackdown. At the weekend, a second person was shot dead by federal agents in Minneapolis. And China's relaxing visa requirements for British tourists. A deal's also been done to reduce tariffs on Scotch whisky imports during Sir Keir Starmer's visit to Beijing. LBC weather, rain continuing to move north-eastwards tomorrow. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is 11.03, Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Keep your calls coming in on why you think young people get so little support from the rest of the country. Why there's not a kind of campaign of solidarity with them for the young graduates being absolutely ripped off by the government right now, hit with eye-watering debts and eye-watering interest rates on those debts. That means they're going to pay back, in many cases, multiples of what they borrowed in the first place. It's a scandal. It's an outrage. one that far exceeds, if you ask me, Rachel Reeves' attempts to ask farmers to pay a bit of inheritance tax when they gift their children £1.5 million in wealth, or pensioners being asked to not take £200 in winter fuel payments if they don't need it. I mean, I didn't really agree with either of those policies, but they pale in comparison to what this government and past governments have done to young graduates through the student loan system. So where's the outrage? Where's the support? Where's the sympathy for this generation? There isn't any, as far as I can see. Barely anyone's talking about it, apart from us and a few other people. Barely anybody. Why? Why is that the case? Where is the sympathy? Why do older generations just sort of shrug their shoulders and wring their hands when it's younger people rather than them being ripped off and conned and missing out because of government policies? 03456060973 for your thoughts on that. Other matters for us to turn our attention to as well, though, tonight. We're going to talk about that this hour too. Namely the fact that the number of school fines handed out for parents taking their children out the classroom in term time has hit another record high. In the last academic year, 459,000 fines were issued in England alone, according to new figures from the Department for Education, for school absences. That's 93% of all fines issued for unauthorised school absence. So holiday fines accounted for 93% of all fines issued for school absences, because more and more parents clearly are choosing to take their children on holiday in term time, which we are told and we're supposed to think is just an outrageous sort of lack of regard for the importance of education, disrespect for teachers, a sign of entitled parents who don't realise how important it is that their kids are in classroom every single day. That's what we're meant to think. Maybe what you think. You might be a teacher with that view. I'd love to hear it. I've got to tell you, I really struggle to care, to be quite honest. People are working damn hard at the moment. What's it all for? If you can't afford to take your children on holiday and make memories together as a family because you simply don't have the money to do that in the summer holidays or the Easter holidays when all the airlines and the hotels and the holiday companies treble or quadruple their packages, if the only way that you can give your children, and yes, let's be honest, yourself, that privilege and that joy of a family holiday away, a week away together in the sun, is by missing a week of school, you know, as a one-off, I personally think good on you. I mean, I'm not encouraging it. I'm not saying do it. But I struggle to judge you for it. I struggle to feel angry about it. I struggle to think that you should be sort of subject to financial penalties or you know, angry letters from the head teacher or shamed into being told that you're kind of failing your children. Because, yes, of course, education matters. It matters massively. But so does having happy children with good family relationships who actually get to spend time with their parents and have a close, positive relationship with their mum or dad, or mum and dad. That matters too. And I struggle to believe that a week off school, once a year, probably less than once a year, is going to do that much damage that it outweighs the benefits that you might get from a lovely family holiday together that you will remember for all the rest of your life. I remember the holidays. All the holidays, pretty much, that I had with my parents. Very, very happy times. So if the only way that parents can give children that joy today is by going during term time because the prices are so expensive the rest of the year, do we care? Is this the outrage that kind of the teachers and the government and, you know, the authorities want us to think it is? Or do you, like me, actually, if that is the context, have some sympathy with those parents? Would you do the same? Have you done the same? And is it really fair to penalise, financially penalise parents just for wanting a family holiday that they can't afford unless it's during term time? 03456060973 for your thoughts on that. Is this a disgrace? Is this a sign of a country that no longer values education? Or actually, do you have quite a lot of sympathy with mums and dads that are making those decisions? You can call or WhatsApp the main number, text me this evening on 84850, or say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Let's talk about it with Chris McGovern, chairman of the Campaign for Real Education and a former head teacher. Chris, good to have you on. I suspect we might disagree on this one, because as I say, I struggle to feel at all exercised about these figures today. Am I wrong?
Well, first of all, the people who suffer most are not the children going on holiday, It's the children who can't go on holiday at any time of the year, because the children who go away have to come back. Mm. Teachers have to give up time to allow those children who've been away to catch up. And if four or five, six, half a dozen children are away, they have to come back. So other children lose time. So although it may well be desirable for a family to have a family holiday, the children who suffer most are those children who are back in the classroom, who are following the rules. And I think, personally, that's completely unfair and completely unacceptable that we should penalise the law abiders, so the law breakers actually benefit, but not those who stay at home and follow the rules.
But, Chris, there's always children off school for illness or, you know, bereavements or religious holidays and so on, and obviously they're legitimate reasons. But teachers, you know, they're expected to catch up, right? If you're off school for a couple of days sick, you're expected to catch up. Surely it can't be the case that teachers are spending all their time helping children who miss a day of school to catch up, or they'd be doing nothing else.
No, they're not spending all their time, but they're spending some of their time. And look, sickness, of course, is unavoidable. We recognise that. But the fact is, it's becoming an epidemic that more and more children are taking time off. Parents have decided that a passport to Mallorca is more important than a passport to the future. Education should be valued. It's unheard of around the world that children should be encouraged by their parents to go on holiday. And when they go on holiday, if they say, well, they learn more about the world. No, they don't learn more about the world in most cases. What they do in many cases, they're on the phone to their friends back at school. The holiday is often more for the parents.
Come on, travel and exposure to other cultures, even if you're just going to, you know, I don't know, Marbella or somewhere. It's still a different culture. It's still seeing a different part of the world. Is there not an argument that it's actually more educational than yet another day of double geography?
Well, not necessarily, no. I don't think that is the case, because those children will spend a lot of time on their smartphones, talking to their friends. The holiday is often off for the parents. The kids want to be at home, want to be with their friends. And the assumption that somehow this is educationally beneficial, it can be. Yes, they could go to a museum or two. That can be educational. But the price we pay is that the majority suffer. That is unacceptable, and it's entirely the wrong message.
I'm missing something here. But if somebody misses a Thursday or a Friday of the last week of term because they're going on holiday, I mean, how much time realistically is the teacher going to spend helping that one pupil catch up? Surely the expectation will be, if you miss school, it's on you to catch up. If you won't, you'll fall behind, but I'm focusing on the rest of the class, as it should be.
Well, you're quite right, yeah. I mean, they do fall behind. We know that statistically they do less well. But actually, they're not taking Thursday and Friday off. No, they're taking 2 weeks off. And they come back. And they've been away for 2 weeks. These parents aren't going for 2 days. They're going for 2 weeks often. They come back after 2 weeks. Right, Johnny, you've been away for 2 weeks. You missed all our new work on fractions, or you missed our new work on phonics or whatever. Mm. You're going to have to catch up. Oh, no, we're not going to let you catch up. You're going to suffer. You're going to fall further behind. We're going to cast you on the scrap heap.
But it's on the parents. It's on the parents to help that child catch up on what they've missed.
Yeah, but they don't. And that's the point. The children who are away on holiday do less well. We know the statistics are very clear. 2 weeks a year over 13 years, it's quite a lot of weeks, and they fall behind, they do less well. And what sort of society is it? We've got children, better Afghanistan, the parents there, the children, the girls there can't go to school. You know, they are forced to stay at home. They want to desperately go to school. What is it in our culture that we're saying, no, it's okay to go to Marbella, it's fine? Because that's what education's about, not really worth anything. So no, education is really important.
You see it as a sign of a country that increasingly doesn't value education as much as it ought to, Chris.
No, it doesn't value education as much as it ought to. And by the way, the kids who would never go on holiday, there are many kids who would never go on holiday, whether they're expensive or not. And they're the ones who need teacher time. And sorry, can't deal with you today because this lad's been in my bay for a couple of weeks. I've got to help him or her. This isn't fair. So look, I, for once, find myself in agreement with governments. We need to encourage parents. Look, if I had my way, ideally, you don't have to find parents. You can encourage the parents to get their kids in school. My own view is parents, and it's a law as well, by the way, parents are the first educators of their children. It's parents' responsibility to educate their children. Find them once and then tell them to go and find another school. Your job, not my job. We're taxpayers. We're paying for these kids to be in school. They should be in school. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine. You go to Marbella, but you educate your own child.
It's not... I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense to me. But, children who... I just wonder how much of this is about financial pressure, in the sense that parents who can easily afford to book flights in the summer holiday when it's 3-4 times as expensive will do so. But this is presumably predominantly parents for whom going during term time, when they can actually afford it, is the difference between going on holiday as a family or not. And if it doesn't happen in term time, then it simply won't happen because it will just be too expensive for them. And that's why I just sort of think, well, if it's the choice between a lovely family holiday that those children will treasure, you know, I still remember the wonderful holidays I had with my parents, which were, you know, we were lucky they were in school holiday time, or missing a week of school. Then is there not an argument, Chris, that actually in the long run, that week of valuable family time is actually going to be better for everybody?
No, it's not. And I'll give you, but I tell you, there's a way forward. We can both agree on this. Why don't we have schools saying, we are a school which you have to attend. We are another school. We're a school which you can come and go as you like. You can, if you sign up for our school, we expect you to attend. In the school rules, there's no way out. You come and you don't go on holiday. This other school, come and go as you like, parents. You'll see which are the popular parents, which are the popular schools there. It won't be the
yes,
ones that
but,
come
but
and
there
go
would also
like.
Be a massive, I mean, the parents who, as I said, the parents who could afford to take their children away during school holidays would all go to the school where you have to go away only during school holidays. And then there's a bind, isn't there, for the other families who think, well, hang on, I can't afford to take my kids away in the middle of August where the flights are 400 quid per person. I can only afford to take them away in September or June, when it's 20 quid per person. And so what do they do?
Yeah, hang on a minute. You had a good holiday. You would remember it. Look, there are many kids who never have any holidays. Never mind whether it's 40 quid or 4 quid.
That doesn't mean that nobody should, just because some children won't ever have any.
Nor does it mean that those kids who never have a holiday should be penalised because the teacher has to spend time letting these other kids. They should not penalise the poor. And what you're advocating is that you penalise the poor because some parents want to go on holiday. Never would I accept that, and we will never go along with that, which is what I say. Have a school where you can have holidays or where you can't. At least that would be fair and honest. Most parents want to go to the school where you have to be there.
What about compulsory after-school catch-up lessons if you miss time? So you have to stay late on a, you know, Monday, Wednesday and a Friday of the week, the week after to help you catch up. Would that be a solution?
Well, first of all, you've got to pay teachers to do that, and you've got to take up teachers' time. And it's making exceptions for kids who have the privilege of a holiday. Look, children have long holidays, and often they don't want to go on holidays. I know it may sound attractive going to my bed. They want to be with their friends. They're on the phone. They're on their smartphone all the time with their friends. It's often the parents. Look, I'm not against. There are always exceptions. Of course, there are always exceptions. And when I was a head teacher, I recognised there were exceptions. But no, there could be a parent who's in the armed forces. It may be an exception, even though I don't like the idea. There are some exceptions. I accept that. But no, there are, in my view, children benefit, and the government's view, and the educationist view, and I'm not normally in line with them. The view is generally held and accepted. Children do better if they're in school and they're attending lessons. And if they miss lessons regularly, which could be 2 weeks a year over 13 years or whatever, they will fall behind. So when I said a passport to the future or a passport to Mallorca, you make your choice. And that's it. But this country is falling. We're already 3 years behind the best education system in the world. And now we're saying, we want to go on holiday.
So, yes, if you're right, Chris, and I'm wrong on this, and this is an enormous issue, and we're setting this whole generation of children up for failure because so many of them are, you know, swanning off on holiday with their parents rather than sitting in school in the classroom. You know, more and more parents are paying fines, so presumably the fines that are being levied are not a deterrent. What are we going to do about it? What's the solution?
Well, the solution is very simple. You fine them once, then you tell them to find another school.
Well, you kick out the child if they go on holiday twice in term time.
You tell the parents, these are the school rules, and we, the taxpayer, are funding this. We're going to provide you with an education. It's your job. It's the responsibility of parents who educate their children, not you.
But, Chris, come on. If your worry is children falling behind, they're going to fall a lot further behind if they're booted out of school than they are if they miss a week because they're on holiday.
But don't you see the deterrent there? Don't you see the fact that if you say to a parent, if you don't turn up for school, your child's not going to come to the school, you can find another school where they will have this, then that will mean that you improve attendance and everybody's going to be happy and we're going to do well, our economy's going to flourish and so forth. You send entirely the wrong message to say you can go on holiday.
I mean, would they not just say, oh, sorry, they were ill, or, you know, we had a bereavement, or would people not just sort of find ways around it?
Well, look, there's always some flexibility within the system. And I know we all love our holidays, perhaps we do, the parents in particular. And I'm no exception from that. Ultimately, though, my main argument would always be when some children are away, they have to come back, they have to catch up. And the children who suffer most are those who will never go on holiday, ever.
Chris, we agree to disagree. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. That's Chris McGovern, chairman of the Campaign for Real Education and a former head teacher. No, still not convinced. Still not convinced that that one week in Mallorca is going to devastate a child's future and inflict a life of failure on all his classmates. Not quite what Chris was saying, but am I missing something here? Am I just being too lax? Am I part of the problem, maybe, when it comes to this kind of new approach that seems to have evolved to schools and, you know, maybe a week now and again being a bit optional? Or are you with me that actually a family holiday on the one hand, wonderful sort of week away with your children versus, you know, missing a couple of maths lessons and double geography, is it a disaster? 0345 6060 973. And is it fair that parents are facing financial penalties, hundreds of thousands of them, just for doing exactly that? To your calls right after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Hi Derek, Tara from Flash Designs here. Hope you're well. Not sure if you've seen my emails from last month, but could you please pay my invoice? Thank you so much. Bye. Hi, it's Tara, Flash Designs. Did you get my last voicemail? I know you're busy, but please pay my invoice today, if possible. Hello, again. It's Tara, again. Politely nudging, again.
Still chasing unpaid invoices? Let Sage Copilot help do the chasing so you can get paid up to 7 days faster. Search Sage Accountant today.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:21. Simon says, Ben, I don't know if you've got kids, but I hope your attitude changes towards their upbringing if you do. Thanks, Simon. He's only been born 4 weeks. I'm ready to get it in the neck. I don't think it will. But I take Chris's point about the importance of making sure they catch up. I do think if I took my children out of school during term time, I would definitely do that to avoid disrupting the children. Would I do it? Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would. I absolutely would. Not sure my wife would agree, so perhaps we won't. But let's see what Claire in Wimbledon thinks about it. Is it a disgrace, Claire, do you think, all these parents taking their children out of school? Hi.
I don't like all these emotive words. I think there's... I can understand the school's point of view. I talked a long time ago, but I also understand the parents' point of view. I understand it's not cheaper to go out of term time, and you know that, but I think we're trying to fix the problem the wrong way. I think the pressure needs to be put on the travel companies, not to put on this ridiculous hike, because we ask teachers for an awful lot. Much more than when I was teaching. You know, they've got these, you know, you've seen the amount of violence in the classrooms.
Yep.
They've got loads and loads of kids with mental health problems. They've got insufficient help with SEND. They're teaching sometimes classrooms of 30 kids. So when it's, you're just looking at it as a parent, it's only my little child off for 2 weeks. What difference does that make? But if you think of a classroom of 30, and maybe half of them might go during the school term. It's just yet another. I think in the junior school, it's not so bad. But in senior school, on subjects, particularly sciences, for example, but not exclusively sciences, to have people popping in and out because they're going on holiday and having 2 weeks of work because, you know, the syllabuses are really loaded. Teachers sometimes struggle to get through the GCSE syllabus.
So Claire, would you say it is as disruptive as Chris was just telling us? It really does have an impact on the other children.
It is disruptive, because somehow those kids have got to be caught up, and you might catch up your children, but a lot of parents either wouldn't or don't have the skills. You know, you're obviously educated. I'm educated.
Barely, in my case.
But, if I had to catch up, say, 2 weeks of physics with my kids, because I was never taught physics or chemistry. It wasn't for girls. It's a joke, isn't it?
Is that right? You weren't. The boys did physics.
We didn't have boys.
Oh, it was a girls' school. And they didn't do physics at all.
Because it was a girls' school. We had to have. We did biology because we had to know about, babies, and even then it was rabbits.
Wow.
Rabbits that didn't have certain parts of their anatomy labelled.
What era was this, Claire? When was this?
Oh, a long time ago. I'm 68.
Right, but I bet...
But nonetheless, what I'm saying is, I've had children, I had them very late.
Yes.
And I've been sucked with trying to do physics.
Yes, but I bet when you were at school, you didn't have people sort of leaving left, right and centre to go on holiday with their parents.
Well, it wasn't allowed then.
No, but it's not allowed now, but more and more people are doing it.
What I'm trying to say is, I understand why people want to do this.
Yes.
Because the prices during the holidays are ludicrous.
Yeah.
And that's what we should be pushing against.
But how do you do that? How do you stop the airlines and the hotels putting their prices up?
Well, I think that has to be, done through government and all sorts.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe they're targeting the wrong people. Maybe the government should say, right, it's outrageous that airlines quadruple their fares during the summer holidays. I guess the answer to that is with capitalism, isn't it? Do we want the government sort of setting prices of flights and hotels? Maybe we do. Thank you, Claire. Lovely to talk to you. Mick's on the line in Waltham Abbey this evening. Hi, Mick.
Hi, how are you, Ben?
I'm good, Mick, thank you. Is it? I mean, good. Chris says it's outrageous, it's a sign of a country that doesn't value education. Do you think he's got a point?
No, my stainless steel heart goes out to school teachers because they're all authoritarians and they're all control freaks.
Mum was a teacher.
Parents first and then throw them out. Thank God he's retired from actually teaching and he only heads something, because a man sounds dangerous to me.
Why is he dangerous? Hold on. Mick, what's dangerous about saying that, we need to value education and kids should be in the classroom during term time?
It's punitive. It's punitive on the parents, right?
And yeah, but for the sake of the children.
My point of view is that parents are working 6 days a week. There was a time when we worked on a Saturday to earn extra money to do something special. Now everyone's working 6 days a week.
Well, a lot of people are, yeah.
Well, I think a hell of a lot of people are. Like you say, with your young child, I used to teach anger management. I was a mental nurse. I used to teach anger management to patients. And I said, you draw a line in front of a patient. Once he walks over it, what are you going to do? Punitive measures never work. Love works. Love works. I know it sounds thingy, but no patient ever hit me.
Yeah. Real world experience matters as well.
If I have to restrain you, I'll still work with you afterwards because I care about you,
I hear you, absolutely. Real world experience, life experience matters just as much as academic. Would I take my son? I mean, I hope I don't need to. But would I take my son out of school to take him on a wonderful sort of horizon in expanding, life enriching trip to go and do, tour the Grand Bazaar or wander through the streets of Venice or go on safari? No, I wouldn't do that because he might miss English Lit. I would do it. I absolutely would, because my view is that for his education's sake, that would be more important and memorable than missing a week of school. That's my view on it. Call me call me ridiculous. Call me lax when it comes to education. But, Mick, I'm with you, to be quite honest. Thank you for the call. James is a brand new caller tonight in Leybourne. Welcome, James.
Hello there.
Evening.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely with you on this one. I mean, my son is only sort of 3 years old, so I haven't really had the opportunity to take him out of school, but I believe when he does start school, I wouldn't even blink, I wouldn't think twice. about taking them out in term time. No.
Chris says it's really disruptive, and it's just a sign of your privilege, James, that you're not thinking about the other children in the classroom. What say you?
I know, but then you got to think all of his friends are probably going to be going on their holidays, and I believe it's something that everyone will be doing. Obviously, with the cost of living and everything, everyone's going to be going away. So
but that's when it gets really disruptive.
It's going to be left out.
Because, you know, I say I'd take my son out of school for a week, but if everyone else in his class is thinking that, and there's the classroom's only half full, you know, through term time, and people are coming back saying, oh, sorry, I missed that bit, miss, can you go over it again? I see why Chris, you know, is right to say it could get very disruptive very quickly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can definitely understand some points of what Chris is saying. I can understand, you know, if he falls back on his education and, you know, bits that he misses out on. But I feel that the bits that he will miss out on the 7-day holiday, I think he'll gain more on that holiday than what he would on that 7-day at school.
And what would be the responsible thing to do, wouldn't it? Would be to ask the school in advance, you know, say, look, I'll take the fine, we're going on holiday, there's nothing you can do about it. Can you tell me what he'll miss out on or she'll miss out on so I can make sure that on the plane there or when we get a spare minute or even when we get back, I'm helping them catch up so they're not behind when they get back. That's a sort of sensible way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. Everything nowadays is all online. It's all iPads, tablets. Yeah. Anything that they're missing out on within that week can just be digitally sent over on an iPad, and you can just go through it with them an hour a day, even if when you're on holiday. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that. If I can go away for 7 days and not get penalised, I'll sit down with him for an hour the sun on the beach.
And James, they weren't quite as concerned, these teachers, about all these missed days when they were going on strike a few years ago, were they?
No. That's it.
That's going to prompt some teachers to call
Chris
in
made
and
a point
shout.
When, Chris made a point when he said, sort of like, you know, we shouldn't penalise the poor, but I don't think it's anything to do with poor and rich. I just believe the prices are so hyped now. Yeah. I mean, even if you are loaded with money, why do you want to pay £8,000?
But that's where I disagree with you a little bit.
It's looking like that.
That's where I disagree with it. I don't have much sympathy with, you know, really wealthy parents who could easily afford to go on the summer holidays but want to save a few hundred quid and will sacrifice a week of school to do so. I don't know about that. But if it genuinely is parents who are choosing between not going at all because they can't afford to go in the summer and in the school holidays, or going but missing a week of school, that I do have sympathy for that situation. Should you do it if you can afford not to? I think probably most of us would agree that no, you shouldn't. Take the hit, go in the summer holidays. If it's that or never going on holiday with your family, for me it's the family holiday. People need a reason to work. If you're just working, these people are saying 6 days a week, two jobs, you can't take your kids away for a few days. People are just going, what's the point? What's the point of all this graft? If we're now being told you can't even miss a few days of school for a lovely few days with your family without some head teacher saying, that's a penalty, please. James, lovely to have you on for the first time. Let's speak again, I hope, very, very soon indeed. More of your calls to come on whether maybe you think I'm wrong. Quite a few people texting in saying, yep, Ben, you got this one wrong. This says the country's going to the dogs. We're so ill-disciplined. The elephant in the room is the rip-up prices from the holiday agents. That's the issue that needs to be sorted. Then the problem goes away. That comes in from Steve, which is also true. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Plus, we'll speak to broadcaster Jake Humphrey. We'll talk about masculinity, Andrew Tate, and whether or not he thinks a social media ban for under 16s is a good idea. News headlines first. It is 11:32. Here's Daryl Jackson.
Police are reviewing a report into an orthopaedic surgeon at Great Ormond Street Hospital. It found more than 90 children came to harm Yasser Jabbar's hands over a five-year period from 2017. Women who claim they weren't made aware of a change to their pension age say they're considering legal action after being refused compensation. For a second time, the government has rejected a redress scheme, saying it wouldn't be practical. And Volodymyr Zelensky's thanked Donald Trump for urging Russia's leader not to attack Ukraine this week. The US president says he personally asked Vladimir Putin to avoid doing so during extreme cold weather. LBC weather, rain continuing to move northeastwards tomorrow. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest. Highs of 11 degrees.
LBC.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before, but that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth-floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
The Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up.
A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hi, babe. What a day. Fancy staying in tonight instead? Mackie's calling my name and I saw you can get £5 off if you spend £20 on the app. So, you in? Of course you are. Okay, bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. Save £5 when you spend £20 on food and drink via delivery. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Service and delivery fees apply. Valid once per week, 1st to the 31st of January. Participating restaurants, serving times apply.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders! Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:35 the time. We'll hear from Jake Humphrey about his new book about masculinity, Andrew Tate, social media in just a moment. We'll also be talking more after 12 about Jake's experience of being bullied at school, the impact that had on him, and your experience of bullying and the impact it had on you. First, though, let's carry on our conversation about parents being hit with fines in record numbers for taking their children out of school during term time. Is that a national disgrace, or do you, like me, struggle to feel too angry with those parents? Camille's a first-time caller in Birmingham tonight. Welcome, Camille. Good to have you on LBC.
Hello, mate. Yeah, quick one. What it is I don't think you should be able to...
Camille's gone. That's the shortest first time call in LBC history. Craig's another first time. Oh, no, Craig's gone as well. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Let's talk, shall we, first of all, to Jake Humphrey, who is host of the High Performance Podcast, author of the new book, Micro Habits, Tiny Changes That Supercharge High Performance. I spoke to him a little earlier about his new book, Micro Habits, what they are and how they affect us. And I start by asking him what his favourite small changes are, what his favourite micro habits are that can have an oversized impact.
Okay, so do you mind if I explain very briefly what micro habits are?
Please.
First? Because I think people are like, what habits? Why yep. are they micro habits? So, yes, I host High Performance Podcast with a much cleverer guy than me, Professor Damien Hughes, who is an expert in high performing team cultures. And one thing that I studied psychology at A level, but I got an E for A level psychology. So I can't claim very much knowledge about the topic of micro habits myself, but I've, you know, done over 400 episodes of High Performance, sitting next to Damien, talking to incredible people, many of whom actually are like experts in behavioral science or in how to find an edge in your own life. And what I've learned from them is that the human brain is like it wants to be lazy, right? So anything that you add to your life that causes sort of mental friction is a hard thing to implement in your everyday life. So people often think that if they want to change their lives, they have to make a really big change in a certain direction. And we've all done it, you know, whether it's like a New Year's resolution that I'm going to do this and I'm going to go to the gym Monday to Friday and I'm going to have a six pack by March, or whether it's I'm going to move to a different country, change my life, and then finally I'll discover happiness.
Drastic, big drastic.
Big drastic changes. Those are really hard things to implement in our lives because the brain is naturally looking to conserve energy all the time. So actually, the things that make the biggest difference to the way that our brain operates and the way that our lives travel, the direction of travel of our lives, is to implement tiny, small, almost imperceptible changes that don't cause friction in your everyday life. You don't actually, and this is one of the challenges, you don't really notice the impacts of these tiny changes straight away. But over time, you suddenly look back and think, man, my life is in a completely different place because of what I thought were minuscule changes.
You touched on there the sort of importance of being open and sort of sharing what's going on. Something, you know, you've done throughout your career, and I think inspired a lot of people to do likewise. A lot of men in particular, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true, a lot of men in particular still find that very, very difficult. Why do you think that is, and what do we do about it, Jake? Because it strikes me, you know, again, it's said often, but it never gets any less shocking. Suicide's the biggest killer of men under the age of 50. We still have this massive kind of below-the-surface mental health crisis in younger men in particular.
Yeah.
How much does that trouble you, and sort of, you know, where do we, how do we change that?
Yeah, it troubles me a great deal, and it plays on my mind a lot. And I think sometimes it makes my skin crawl a bit when I get praised for being vulnerable or talking about my failures, right, or my struggles. Because look at me, I'm a guy with his own production company and his own podcast, with a track record in broadcasting, with a healthy bank balance and a lovely family, right? So it's easy for me to talk about my failures and my struggles because I've been successful, therefore I've almost bought the right to do it. What we need to realise is that praising someone like me for doing that is not what we should be doing. We should be asking why the very people that do need to share the fact they're struggling, who are the people who are struggling, who aren't successful like me in the kind of modern way of viewing success, those are the people that we need to give a voice to. Because we almost dismiss the fact that they're struggling. Mm. You haven't earned the right to share your struggles, but these people have. They're such backward thinking. Why is it still such a problem? Why is it still such a challenge? I do think a lot of men struggle to know what it means to be a guy anymore. Are we the strong, silent type, or are we the vulnerable, open type? If we're vulnerable and open, are we still going to be judged? You know, we did an episode recently on high performance where I texted a few of my friends who play football in the Premier League, and I said, I just want a really anonymous, no names used conversation about how much you're actually able to open up as a professional footballer. And one of the people replied to me and said, we get told all the time to be open and to be vulnerable and to talk about our mental health. Yet I know that if I do that, a manager of the club I'm at now or a manager of a future club will look at that like I've got the mental version of a broken leg.
Wow.
Or like I'm carrying an injury.
Against them.
Like I'm carrying an injury, like I've got some sort of flaw. And I still think that, I just think the vast majority of men still feel like that. So therefore we don't talk about it because we still feel like we're going to be judged for sharing it, you know, and loneliness is something that kills people. And I look at my wife, massive group of girlfriends from school. I don't really have that. You know, I don't.
Not many of us do as men, I don't think.
No.
And it's sad though.
It is sad, and sometimes it's almost like shameful to say it. Do you know what I mean? Like if you go, I don't really have a best friend.
There must be something wrong with you.
I've got like a group of mates that I like hanging out with, and I can talk openly with. But do I have? Is there anyone in my life apart from my wife that I would be comfortable telling I'm struggling and crying in front of?
Mm.
Probably not.
Me neither.
Probably not.
I think that's true of most men. It's a problem,
and then we wonder why.
Why it's such a
I think a lot of men feel like what they don't want is pity as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's one of the problems.
And the point you made there about kind of men not knowing, you know, are we supposed to be vulnerable, open, and emotive, or are we still supposed to be the sort of strong, dependable breadwinner, or both? And then you've got the likes of Andrew Tate kind of saying, here's, you know, providing a very clear idea of what a man should be. I think one that's pretty toxic. But does that concern you that you've got these sort of people like him on social media kind of perhaps doing a better job than any of the rest of us at educating or giving young men a sense of what a masculine man in this day and age is?
I think that's the saddest thing of all. I think that someone like Andrew Tate knows the strings to pull to make young men feel like he has the answer. Mm. This stuff I hate because it's kind of, it feels like help and guidance, right, for young men. But it isn't. It is sexism, chauvinism, aggression, all dressed up as I'm going to help you and I'm going to look after you. And it's none of those things. And I think that's one of the real fears for me is if we don't have the right conversation for young men, if we don't have the right role model for young men, they will lean more and more to the likes of Andrew Tate and think that that's where the answer can be found.
Is he dangerous, do you think? And the narrative, is it threatening?
Of course it's a dangerous narrative. Absolutely. Absolutely it's a dangerous narrative. And Andrew Tate's not the only one either, you know. The whole world is becoming ever more angry, ever more divisive, ever more aggressive. It's harder than ever before to know who to trust and why to trust them. And are they actually here for me or are they here for themselves? If I was 16, 17 growing up now, with the information overload, I wouldn't know which way to turn, would you?
No. Are you in favour of this ban on social media for
100%. 16? Now, what I think is really interesting is that banning it from them is not going to solve all the problems. What we need here is education. Because in the way that I say, like, I think the cards are stacked against young people, if you can curate your Instagram, like, your phone is your modern library now, right? So what you need to do is go into all of your social media apps and remove the setting that says, feed me what you think I want, and instead, give me what I've chosen, right? So you try and remove as often as possible the algorithm working on your behalf. And then you curate a library of value. Because if you don't, you're going to be fed the kinds of messages, and we've spoken about one of them, Andrew Tate. This stuff will start being fed to you.
This is what the children are getting.
Dangerous messages, dangerous information. You know, I'm sure my daughter, she's only 12, and this morning I went in to give her a kiss before I came to work, and she was putting lip liner on. Now, I don't think my wife's ever spoken to her about lip liner. I don't think I have, but I'm pretty sure she's seen it on someone's YouTube or somewhere else, and it's suddenly saying, oh, I better make sure that I put a red line on my lips so I look pretty.
It's scary.
Because that's really important. So we need to, but then mobile phones and YouTube and Instagram can be the greatest source of information for us, because every brilliant piece of learning that's ever happened in this world is on YouTube or is on Instagram. But it's hard to find it because you have to filter through all of the crap to get to the stuff that's valuable. So it's not just about banning it and saying you can have this when you're 16 and not before, because what happens then at 16, they go on and that's it. What we need to say to them is, let us show you how, when you are finally able to use social media, YouTube and other things, that you can use it.
So it's both. Because so you ban it, but also you have the education there, so they're ready when they do. I think the government should just get on and do it now. I mean, Australia's done it, obviously. There's a lot of debate about that. I don't see how the benefit of social media to, you know, we're talking 7, 8, 9, as you know, Jake. I don't see the argument that says the benefits outweigh the downsides.
I fully agree with you. And I feel it should be banned. But then I feel we then have to educate young people that if you're going to use it, it can also be a really powerful tool. Because the other risk we run here, Ben, is that this is going to be in their lives. AI is going to be part of their lives. YouTube, social media, comparison culture, all of that stuff is going to be an ever-present for our young people to cope with. They need to be app literate. They need to be social media literate. They need to be internet literate. They need to understand the workings of AI, because that's going to be the world that they live in. So we can't just remove it and then one day give it to them like this poisonous gift.
Yes.
We have to do what we can to try and make it as valuable as possible.
Jake Humphrey there, broadcaster, host of the High Performance Podcast, author of the new book, Micro Habits, Tiny Changes That Supercharge High Performance. You hear more of my interview with Jake at 12. We'll talk about his experience of bullying at school and mine. And I want to hear about your experiences as well of that. For now, though, we'll come back in a moment to your calls on whether it really is outrageous that so many parents are taking their children out of school in term time, and whether they should really be facing financial penalties if they do. Ben Kentishere, this is LBC.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Lewis and Emily are in Minneapolis, the city where ICE raids have been going on for the past week, leaving the city a tinderbox of tension. A special report from there on the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. tap the NHS app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ben Kentish. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10 to 12. More of Jake Humphries in a few minutes' time. First, we've got Camille, first-time caller. Well, second-time caller now, Camille, given we spoke for about 10 seconds a few minutes ago. You wanted to talk about whether it's right or wrong that parents, more and more parents, are taking their children out of school, Camille. Fire away. Hi.
Hello, mate. Yeah, it's not wrong that you want to take them out of school. I've got a holiday booked in June. It's not in the school holidays. Paid $4,000 for it for me and my two kids, my missus. In the school holidays, it's $6,500. So even if you get a fine, you're in the pocket. And on top of that, I tell you what is bad. My daughter's been out of school for the last 2 weeks. She's gone to school for one day last week. One day tomorrow, she's going to school, first day this week. They've been on strike for the last 2 weeks.
Well, the teachers?
The teachers have been on strike. For 2 weeks. I've got another week booked off next week. The school's under the Arthur Terry umbrella in Birmingham.
Right.
Yeah. And they've been off for 2 weeks.
Why are they on strike?
Because something about pay and whatnot. Look into it, man. Look into it and bring it up, man, because it's a joke.
And yet Chris is telling us that it's outrageous when kids miss time. I guess slightly playing devil's advocate here, Camille, to be honest with you. But I guess the argument is, well, if all the kids are missing a week, it's easier for them to catch up and it's less disruptive than if it's someone's missed this day and someone else has missed that day and someone's taken 1 week off, but someone's taken two and everybody's at different stages of the syllabus because they've all been on holiday at different times. I guess that's more disruptive, maybe.
Yeah, I hear that fully, but you know what it is? My daughter's in what? Year one. My son's in nursery. They're not really missing out on anything. You know, like someone else said, if it's junior school and it's a big science lesson or this and that. And okay, fair enough, but what they're missing out on in year one or the social skills, but the memories they're going to make on the holiday with me.
It's very different to doing it a week before the GCSEs, for example.
Yeah,
Wait, where are you going, Camille?
I'm at work.
No, where are you going on holiday?
Oh, Turkey.
Lovely. For a couple of weeks?
Just for a week.
Just for a week.
We get fined.
Are you going to tell the school in advance, or what are you going to do?
No, I'm just going to go, and if they want to deal with it after I get back, then I deal with it then.
And if they say, this is outrageous, you've disrupted the whole class, all these other children are having their education hindered because of you, what would you say?
Yeah, then I'll just say the strikes were outrageous as well. I know it's tit for tat, but it is what it is, isn't it?
Well, no, they can't really make the point about children missing school if they've all been on strike for 3 weeks. Thank you, Camille. Lovely to talk to you for the first time. Are you going to judge Camille? How can his daughter miss a week of year one? How dare he? I'm not. Good on you, Camille. Enjoy it. Enjoy every minute. As you say, the kids will remember that, and they'll probably get more from it. than they would from that week at school. That's my view on it anyway. 0345 606 0973 for your thoughts on that. This comes in, no name on it, says, sorry, Ben, I come from a council estate background and travelled to places like Mexico and Italy, broadened my horizons. I can teach my children more from travelling than a teacher can in the classroom, says that message. And this is from Karen. Ben, what about the children whose parents can't afford to take their children on holiday and don't get extra time away from school? That was me. I hated school and knowing that classmates had a week or two off plus a holiday abroad. Boy, that hurt, says Karen in Cramlington. Let's talk to Colin in Uxbridge more about holidays and whether it's really right to take kids out of school to go on them. Morning, evening, Colin.
Yeah, hi, Ben. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to be popular, but, you know, hey, it's... I mean, I'm 66 now. So, you know, when I used to go to school, I never did go on any holidays until I started my first job as a chef. That was my first time abroad. Then I was able to contribute. But you know what? It wasn't really venues made holidays. It's the family made holidays. Mm. We just used to go camping. And Ben, I mean, I don't know if you know Hefo, but we would just go camping probably 5-6 miles away from where we live. We had fishing, we had the rivers and that to swim in, we had lots of stuff going on the campsite and bits and pieces. In fact, my dad used to put the tent up at the beginning of the summer, and it would be up all through the summer. My dad would go from work from the site.
Right.
And we would spend all the time there. And obviously, there'd been at different campsites around the South Coast and stuff.
But you had a holiday, and you I can tell, Colin, you remember them fondly. So would you say if parents can't afford to take their children abroad, unless it's during term time, then the answer isn't to take the kids out of school, it's to find a cheaper holiday?
Well, I just think, I mean, you know, I think it's just putting things in perspective. I think the expectations of the kids now are put there by us, you know. Mm. I mean, you know, is it because you want to take the kids to Spain, or is it because you want to go to Spain and have your jollies, you know? And I think that, you know, education is important, and I understand some of the calls you've had, and, oh, I taught my child a lot more because I went away on holiday as a kid, and this. But it's just life skills, Ben. I mean, you know, I love my chefing job. I mean, I'm blind now. I went blind about 18 years ago. Mm. But I've got a daughter. She's 40 now. And she, you know, we did take her out of school or anything like that because, A, we never had the money, but the expectations were that we just didn't do it. We just stayed in Blighty. And there's some beautiful places there. And I know times have changed now, Ben. I'm not a complete dinosaur. The kids are exposed to all this online stuff and seeing the whole world in front of them. And, of course, what goes on at school. Because I had a friend that always used to go to Florida every year. His dad worked for the airport. And, of course, there's a little bit of jealousy there. But you know what? We had a fantastic time.
I hear you, Colin. I think there's something in you, what you're saying. The children will remember the fun, happy times with their family. They won't remember, you know, whether that was in Margate or Mallorca or Mexico. Do you care when you're seven? Maybe you do a bit, but what you really care about is having that special time with your family and your parents. You're onto something, that it doesn't have to be a big, expensive foreign trip to make that a reality. Lovely to have you with us tonight, Colin. Thank you for your call, and thank you for tuning in as well. Gary's on the line of Colchester. Gary, you wanted to pick up the conversation we were having a while ago about young people being screwed over by the government when it comes to student fees and nobody seeming to care. Please.
Yeah, I just think they're just a disenfranchised generation of people, you know. And my daughter's 21, she's on her final year at uni doing a nursing degree to go into the NHS, and she's going to be straddled with this massive debt to go into a job that's going to benefit the greater good of the country, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just think it's like grossly unfair that she's going to be straddled with this debt.
How much has she got, as you know?
I think she's paying $9,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to say. I just think it's just logically just not, it just doesn't make sense.
It's crazy. And people have been texting in throughout this sort of conversation saying, well, they don't need to go to university. To which your response and mine would presumably be, well, all right, good luck being treated by a doctor or a nurse who hasn't done their studies.
Yeah, and also she's done placements at hospitals, obviously, because it's part of the degree. And she's going to be doing a 3.5 month placement at Norwich Hospital. And when she did a placement at the hospital before, she was paying £13 a day to park a car there.
They used to get bursaries. We used to try and help people become nurses. Now we seem to make it as hard as we can financially.
It's just, I don't know, it just baffles me. I mean, I don't know.
How old are you, Gary, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I'm 52, you know, and I try and help her out. Yeah.
What do you make about my point that people, I'm not talking about you specifically, but people of your generation and older don't do enough to support and look after and kind of stand alongside people like your daughter?
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know. I just feel like completely sort of, I don't know. I just got no hope, you know.
I hear you.
No sense of positiveness for it all, you know.
I hear you, Gary, and you're not alone in that. And if more people who weren't directly affected, either through their own student loans or their children, started to sort of take a bit more of an interest about people who are in that position, then maybe not as many people like Gary's poor daughter would be being burdened with not just massive debts, but eye-watering interest rates on those debts as well. I looked at, I'm getting this car. I've got to go and buy a car this weekend to actually fit a child car seat in. I'm going to pay less interest rate on my car finance than people are now paying on student loans from the government. It's crazy. Thank you, Gary. Thank you for your calls on family holidays as well. We're going to move on after the news at 12 and talk about bullying, your experience of it, and how it shapes your life.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, more than 90 children suffered harm at the hands of a surgeon at Great Ormond Street Hospital. A review of Yasser Jabbar during his time at the hospital has found many were left in pain or needing further operations. Some ended up with legs at different lengths, something he should have worked to correct. Janetta Nana Uwusu was among his patients.
The pain was really horrible, like excruciating pain. I just thought, oh, this surgery would be like very quick and easy and I'll just go home after. And then it wasn't a really nice experience.
Well, hospital bosses have apologised and say there are no excuses. A teenager will be sentenced next month after admitting to the murder of a 12-year-old boy at a park in Birmingham. Leo Ross was stabbed to death in Hall Green in January last year. Women who claim they weren't properly informed about changes to their state pension age say they're considering legal action. The government has, for a second time, rejected their calls for compensation, arguing they were given plenty of warning. The Work and Pension Secretary says it would be hard to identify those who genuinely suffered as a result. Angela Madden is the chair of the Women Against State Pension Inequality Group, known as WASPI Women. She's told LBC they will continue the fight.
They're a very small group of very powerful people who have decided that the harm and injustice we've suffered doesn't matter. When one of the things that the Parliamentary Ombudsman knew was the department was always going to defend itself. And that's why they laid the report before Parliament to decide, not just the few ministers that happen to believe that they're always right.
A 27-year-old woman's been charged with murder after the death of a 1-year-old girl on the Isle of Wight in August last year. Jayla G. McLaren died in hospital 2 days after she was taken there with serious injuries. Samara J. Glover has been charged with murder and causing or allowing the death of a child. And Lord Jim Wallace, who served as Scotland's first ever Deputy First Minister, has died. The former Scottish Liberal Democrat leader was 71. His family say he suffered complications after surgery. LBC weather, rain continuing to move northeastwards today. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest, highs of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's Friday morning. We nearly got there. We're nearly there. Nearly the weekend. 12:03 is the time. A very good morning if you're just tuning in and joining me here on LBC. Late Nights with Ben Kentish for one more hour of this week. And we're going to talk something about a subject that's close to my heart. And I think something that affects a lot of us. A lot of us in this country that maybe is a bit difficult for people to talk about, but I hope we'll be able to do it between now and 1 a.m. And that is bullying and the impact that it's had on you throughout your life, whether that bullying was as a young child, perhaps it was inflicted on you by a family member, perhaps it was at school, perhaps it was friends. It might have been as you got a bit older. It might have been when you entered the world of work that bullying reared its head and had you in its sights. But either way, I think all of us that have been through it will know that it does leave a mark on you. It does have an impact, particularly, I think, if you do go through it as a young age. And it's something that so many of us have experienced in so many different guises and shapes and forms that I really wanted to make sure we talked about it this hour and kind of compared experiences and also the impact it had on you, how it shaped you as a person for better and also for worse. So if you were someone who's been on the receiving end of bullying, whether as a child or an adult, I'd really like to hear your stories between now and 1 o'clock about what it was like for you at the time, but also how you think it changed you as a person. And there will be ways that it probably changed you that you don't like, but there might also be ways that it changed you that you look back and you think, you know, I still probably wish it had never happened. But actually, in some ways, it made me a better person. It made me kinder. It made me stronger, maybe. I don't know. You tell me. But I think very few people have been bullied and not been changed in some way by the experience. For me, it was at primary school. I'll tell you more about it a little later. But it was incredibly tough. And it's definitely had an impact on me, positive and negative, I think. We're talking about this in part because, as you heard a little earlier in the show, I spoke to Jake Humphrey earlier, a well-known broadcaster, also host of the High Performance podcast, author of the new book Microhabits, Tiny Changes That Supercharge High Performance. Jake's spoken very openly about his experience of bullying. I mean, it's something that I wanted to ask him more about. And I started by asking him what form that bullying took for him and what it was like for him as a child.
So I was born in Peterborough. And we moved to Norwich, where I grew up. I was born in 78. We moved there in 1987. So I was like 9 years old or something. So it was the final year of primary school when basically friendship groups had been formed. And I arrived at this new school. Didn't really fit in or make friends very easily. And, you know, like then you try a bit harder, which is like the worst thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. So I did a bit of time at my primary school and then went to the senior school. And still hadn't kind of formed these friendship groups. And like school is an unforgiving place in 2026 and certainly was an unforgiving place in the late 80s, early 90s. And it took the form of obviously name calling, physical abuse. I remember one time we finished a swimming lesson at school. And as I took my swimming costume off before I put my pants on, my towel got ripped off me and I got pushed out the door of the changing room. Into like outside the school changing room was basically a car park with classrooms all around. So like hundreds of kids looking out of the window laughing at me trying my best to preserve my modesty in the car park. And it's funny, like even now when I drop Flo and Seb off at school and they walk off and they love school and they're very happy, I feel the sense of dread I felt getting out of my mum and dad's car or cycling to school and walking in every day. And we talk about building resilience. It was the most painful and horrendous few years of my life, without doubt. I was so sad and lots of tears with my mum and dad trying to solve the problem. But the fact I put my backpack on and went into school every day, on reflection, I'm quite proud of the fact that I managed to do that. Mm-hmm. And eventually changed schools and things improved. But it was really tough, and I talk about it a lot because it's the thing I hate the most in the world. I don't want us to live. Yes. And you see it now from the very top of politics all the way down. And I worry that we're creating a generation of bullies and the bullied. That's the world that we live in now. You know, look at the narrative in this country at the moment, that everyone who, you know, people beneath you need to be pushed further down. You know, this this narrative that we're that we're told, this lack of kindness, this lack of love. Like, we're all human beings at the end of the day, and we can be very cruel. Like, did you experience anything like that?
Yeah, similar, very similar. Actually, yeah. Last year of primary school as well. And the thing that I think made it particularly hard for me, it was slightly different deal. It was people that I had been friends with.
Yeah.
And I basically fell out with one guy in the class. I don't even remember. One guy just took a dislike to me. And he was quite a kind of, you know, authoritative person in a classroom full of 11-year-olds. And proceeded to kind of turn the people who, for the entirety of primary school, had been, you know, good friends of mine, had been to my house, had been to theirs, I knew their families, against me. And it was awful. It was really, really, wasn't physical in the way that yours was, but it was a kind of gradual process through that last year of, I don't know what the right word is, exilation almost, of just sort of being made to, you know, almost feel like a leper.
Mate, I know that feeling.
I had been mates with for years.
Because, you know, I don't remember I know it was physical because you just know, but I don't remember that. I don't remember the pain of that. What I do remember is the pain of loneliness.
Yeah.
Mate, do you remember, like...
And that feeling, what's wrong? Why? What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with me?
Like, the answer is nothing.
Why am I so...
You don't know, like, that at the time.
Why am I so annoying to people? Why does everyone hate me so much? What, you know, what is it that... They say that and everyone laughs. I say the same and everyone just goes, shut up. You're embarrassing. They used to park two school buses in the playground where I was at school. I used to just go and sit in between them because it was dark. No one could see you were in there.
Mm.
And that would, like, be lunchtime. Like... How sad is that? You know?
It's hard, you know, and it really resonates with me listening to you talk about it.
Can you still feel it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because I don't think, you know, it's such a young and formative age. I'm interested in your thoughts. I don't think it ever fully leaves you. Yeah. I find it embarrassing to talk about because I still have and you obviously don't, and I think that's great, but I still have this sense of people will think there must have been a reason.
Yeah.
You know, that 11-year-old that's sort of sitting there thinking, well, you know, you must be a bit weird or you must deserve it in some way. That voice has never fully gone away when I talk about it now.
It's interesting because, you know, when you're then at a broadcast, when you're on the telly, it's a weird thing for someone who was bullied to want to do because all you're doing is asking for people to have an opinion about you. And even when I sit here and talk about being bullied, I can see the post on X going... Jack Humphrey just said, no, obviously he was bullied. Shock horror.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he was.
Yep.
And you think, oh, man, like, it's the sort of conversation that you still feel a bit of shame about and you still feel could bring you even more of that same feeling. And I tell you, having been a broadcaster for a long time and having had my fair share of criticism being a broadcaster, someone having a pop at you on social media that they forget about that moment as soon as they've sent it, it feels no different to someone in the classroom telling you that no one likes you. It just feels
But I wonder if that's because that is what we went through. I wonder if other people who didn't have that experience, it wouldn't affect them in the same... I don't know. Maybe it would.
But I think the point is, from my perspective, is that we look at social media criticism and abuse as a not-so-serious form of bullying, right?
And it is.
And it absolutely is. Of course, it absolutely is.
Sorry, Jason.
Go on.
How is Jake Humphrey now different as a result of what you went through at school? You talked about the positives of developing, you know, the belief that you can get through something as agonising as what you went through. What other sort of, you know, impacts? Because I talking from my experience, I think it does have a mark. I think it makes it harder to trust people. I think you're always, you know, there's always that suspicion of just knowing how cruel other people can be. That you take with you into adulthood, and I'm interested in sort of how it's changed you or affected you as a man.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I've never had that sense of a lack of trust with other people. I'm actually the opposite to a fault where like I will totally trust you, believe in you, bring you on the journey with me, invest in you, help you and guide you until you prove that I shouldn't. But I'm basically too trustworthy.
It's much better to be that way around.
Yeah, but maybe that also comes from being a young kid and wanting to trust everyone because you're looking all the time for the one person that just might be nice to you. And when they do, you latch onto it. And then you find out 2 days later that they were, like, doing it for a dare for their mates or whatever. And you're like, oh, my God.
Yep.
I do think that people that have been through what you've been through and what I've been through, I do think it gives you a heightened sense of empathy.
Yes.
I do think that when you've had challenges in your life...
Yes.
And you've lost loved ones, And I've lost young friends, and obviously, you know, my grandma in a really tragic circumstances. And when you've had those things happen, I think it gives you an understanding of other human beings, of human nature. And I honestly think my grandma's story, the bullying story, the failure story, all of that is the reason why I've written a book like Micro Habits, or I host a podcast like High Performance. And I'm kind of pleased, you know, like I walked away from F1, from presenting the Premier League, because it didn't feel like purpose driven. High Performance feels very purpose driven. And I know it's not for everyone. But I'm kind of, if the payoff of going through those tough times is to have found something like this, then I think I'm okay with what went on.
Have you ever thought about what you would say to the bullies if you met them again?
I did, but I did used to. But I think now, like, I always tell my kids now that you don't want to have your peak years between the ages of 12 and 17. This obsession we have for helicopter parenting, hovering around our kids, removing all the challenges, removing all the obstacles, making sure they have no failure, sets our kids up for a life of being unable to cope with failure. So I honestly, I do think I've let go of it. I think I realise that young kids can be really cruel, but are not necessarily nasty people. They just did nasty things. They didn't know any better. They got carried away with the crowd. And also this feeling, right, which is a weird one to get your head around, when you have people who pose challenges in your life. This feeling that if you'd have lived the life that they lived, you would do the things that they do. So those people that chose to get their happiness from making me unhappy at school, or those people that chose to get their happiness from making me feel unhappy as an adult on social media or in the media, if I'd have lived their life, maybe I would have wanted to get my happiness the same way that they do.
It sounds like you almost empathise with them, which is quite incredible given the sort of pain they inflicted on you. You know,
yeah, but they're just human beings, right? And I'm okay. I'm a happy guy, and I hope you are as well.
I am.
What about you? What would you say?
I still feel quite angry about it.
Do you?
I don't think I'm quite as peace at it. I mean, it's not something that I think about day to day. But when it does come up, like talking to you about it now, I still feel a sense of resentment. Firstly, at the kind of, you know, the pain that was sort of inflicted then. But also, as I say, I think the impact has. I'm the opposite. I'm quite a closed person. I'm quite guarded. It takes me quite a while to open up to people and let people in. And I think that is because of that very stark life lesson, that even the people who were your mates can turn against you quite easily.
Yeah.
And I know that, I say that now, and I know that, I know my friends, I know rationally that I've got great friends now, and I know that wouldn't happen, but there's still that kind of latent memory of that happening, I guess.
And that is, by the way, totally understandable and acceptable. But it's also worth asking yourself, what would life look like if you didn't feel like that?
Mm.
And is it serving you to feel like that or not?
It's a balance, isn't it? It's a balance, I think. But I also relate to what you said about, you know, firstly, the empathy. I've got almost sort of pathological kind of, what's the word? Sort of, not attraction, but I root for underdog. When I see an underdog, I feel such a kind of, really, really intense sort of desire for them to do well. And the same with, you know, people who are lonely. I feel such a kind of connection and want to help. And that empathy and that being able to put yourself in other people's shoes. Would I change? I don't know if I would change that. I'm with you, I think. I think it, you know, as awful as it can be and as painful as it is, there are positives, and there are kind of enormous life lessons that I'm glad I learned.
Yeah.
And you put it really well.
There's a lovely... There's a Latin amor fati, which means accept your fate.
Mm.
And I think, you know, one thing that you have to do is understand the difference between fault and responsibility. Mm. And actually, a lot of your listeners, you know, it's important for them to understand this as well. So many things happen in our life that are not our fault. Trauma from childhood, a difficult relationship with a parent or a child or a partner, a health condition that blindsides you, an illness in the family, being sacked from work, money troubles, like all these things. There are so many things that are not your fault, right? But we have to have this clear understanding that they remain your responsibility. And that can be a very hard message for people sometimes. They're like, what? So I carry a trauma from childhood, then it's my responsibility to... What about the person that did the trauma? Yeah, but you've got to separate fault from responsibility. Absolutely. Because blaming them or living with that sense of offering up fault is just going to eat you up. Like the best example of this that affected the whole world was COVID.
Yeah.
It was none of our fault, but we all had a responsibility to deal with it.
Yep.
And you have a responsibility to process what happened to you and to still be a great friend, to still be a great dad. It's probably made you a better friend, a better dad, and definitely a better broadcaster.
Yep. I don't know if I'd be doing this job if that hadn't happened. There you actually go.
There you go.
Because you know that to be as empathy, as you say, it's about empathy.
So let it go. Just let it and let them go after this moment. Yeah. Just do, it's serving you in no way to carry that. In fact, I would go so far as to say, be grateful.
Yeah.
Why don't you? Because we.
I really relate to that. Actually, that reframe.
I think so.
Yeah.
We talk often about, you know, who are the people in your life that are responsible for you being where you are, right? And then people go, oh, my mum, my dad, my best friend at school. Okay, great. Like, all of those people are your collaborators. Yep. Absolutely. Guess who else is your collaborator? Your bully.
Yep.
The first boss who sacked you. The person who said something horrible to you on your first day at work that made you realise how harsh the world can be.
It's very true.
You know, let's realise everyone is a collaborator for the life that we're living now. And I hope that people will listen to this and maybe some of them will finally go, I am just going to let that go.
Well, that's Jake Humphrey.
Let that go.
Jake Humphrey there, host of the High Performance Podcast, author of the new book, Micro Habits, Tiny Changes That Supercharge High Performance. So it did a bit of a sort of joint therapy session, that, didn't it? But what a wonderful guy and a wonderful guest. And I'm really glad Jake came on and talked to us and was so open about his experience. Over to you and your experiences next. It's 12:20.
This is LBC.
At Signature, our award-winning care homes are where luxury, comfort and peace of mind come together. With locations across London and the home counties, we offer exceptional residential, nursing and dementia care within five-star surroundings that feature a wealth of amenities, including our new wellness studios. To find out how you can receive an exclusive £1,000 discount with our new inclusive pricing, book a visit now at signaturecarehomes.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply.
At Vista Village, there's no ask too big and no detail too small. Shop with up to 40% off every day at The White Company, Jo Malone London and more. Discover helpful services and delicious dining around every corner. And always more reasons to stay a little longer. Vista Village. What will you find?
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Lots of your calls coming in about your experiences of bullying because it is so common. I think, I don't know about most of us, but an awful lot of us have been through it at some point, haven't we? And lots of you wanting to talk about it, which is wonderful. Richard's a first-time caller to kick us off this morning in Peterborough. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Ben.
Good to have you with us, Richard. Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to talk to you as well. I wanted to just talk about being bullied as an adult in a work situation. Sorry.
It's okay. You take time, Richard. It's hard. It's a hard thing to talk about. Of course it is.
Absolutely. About 5 years ago, I had a contract with a company. I was managed by two different managers in that contract. So this is what they call matrix managing, where you have multiple managers. You don't just report to one person. Both of those managers were what I would call toxic people who gaslighted you all the time. But what was worse was that they also hated each other and they would use me as a pawn in their chess game against each other. And, you know, so everything I did, they would question and say that I hadn't done what they wanted, but they were playing me off in the chess game between each other. Right. And, yeah, it was just absolutely awful.
Sorry, Richard. No, please carry on.
Yeah. And so that contract finished. I actually became quite depressed. And after that, and it's actually affected. This was 5 years ago, but it's still affected my mental health to this day, you know. I remember there was one day when my mum came to visit me in London, and she booked a ticket for the family to go to the Albert Hall to watch the Proms. And I did go, but after a couple of minutes in the Proms, because I was so stressed about work and so stressed about Monday morning, I had to run out of the Albert Hall, basically run out into the street and go home, you know, and say, I'm sorry, Mum, I can't do this, I'm too stressed. it can affect you so much psychologically, it really can.
It makes you question your whole kind of sense of who you are, doesn't it? And whether the things that you felt confident about or the things you thought you could trust and believe in yourself, it chips away at those things sort of day after day after day after day.
It does. I mean, it was only a 6-month contract. It wasn't that long. But because every single day I was questioning what I did, because every time I would report things that I was doing, they would say, we never asked you to do that in the first place.
Right.
When they had asked me to do it in the first place.
Right.
And it's like being pawn in a chess game.
And it went on for 6 months, and then the contract finished, did it, Richard?
Well, I did see the contract through to the end, but it didn't last.
How has it kind of changed you as a person, you know, in the 5 years since? Is it something you now feel that you're sort of past, or
No, I'm not past it, because I've actually, since I had that, since that contract ended, I have had a couple of short jobs, but I'm unemployed now, and I'm actually scared to go back to work.
Oh, Richard.
Yeah.
Is your fear that you might get another boss like that, or is it more that it's just taken away your confidence in yourself as an employee?
I think it's a bit of both. I've got a fear of going back to work, because I don't want to have another toxic boss.
Yeah.
But it's also knocked my confidence completely as well.
Of course it has. Very, very understandably. Have you spoken to anybody about it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Okay. I've had some therapy and stuff like that, and that's been really helpful. But I just want to say that it can leave a huge emotional scar, and that can last for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I hope you know, that it wasn't about you at all. That it's a reflection of them, not you, but it doesn't always feel that way, does it? You can know that consciously, and yet you're sort of, your body's telling you something different.
Yes, I'm aware that it's not about me. It's about their own personal mental processes and everything like that. Yes. But you still kind of feel that it's about you. They make it about you. Absolutely.
I'm so sorry.
It's not about you.
I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Thank you.
I really am. Yeah. It's, you know, it's hell. Yeah. I really feel you.
It is.
And I hope that, you know, gradually in time, the impact that I can hear, the impact it still has on you, starts to fade, and you start to realise what a wonderful guy, and I'm sure a wonderful worker, that you really are.
I'd like to believe that, but of course, you know, that's not for me to judge. But when honest feedback, honest criticism is absolutely fine.
Of course. That's not honest feedback. That's gaslighting, and that's bullying, and that's actually really, really quite malicious, what you went through. I'm really sorry, Richard. It's an ill. I had the boss when I was younger. It was a bully, and it sent me right back to when I was that 11-year-old in the classroom. It's really, really tough. And my heart goes out to you, and I really feel your pain. I really, really do. Thank you for the call, Richard. Brave of you to call in for the first time and talk about it so openly. Thank you. Emma's calling from Coventry to carry on our conversation about bullying. Morning to you, Emma.
Hello, Van. This is I'm 49 now. And when I hear topics about bullying, it makes me feel sick, because it reminds me of how I was when I was bullied at school. I was bullied from my infant school. They they knew that there was something wrong, and they found out I couldn't hear properly, and that's how come I didn't actually know or difficulty in learning. But and that followed into secondary school, and when I was at secondary school, I was flat out, I was kicked, I had a knife put to my throat, I was thrown downstairs. I was told that I would be a failure, that I wouldn't get anywhere in life, and I was stupid because I was in low group for everything. So the classes that we were in, it was baby group, so it was basically, you know, you're going to do nothing. And it does affect me when people do talk about it, but I want to know to tell the teachers that bullying still carries on now, and I just get so angry that it doesn't stop with the amount of stuff that I had. I used to hide in classrooms when it was lunchtime. I used to hide in classrooms and that so that I tried to get away. We was on. We have like a private bus to take us to school. I was egged and floured on there. I was punched. I one occasion they slapped me across my face. They pulled my hair right back, and they jarred my neck. They got their rings off, and they got my fingers, and they scraped my finger, the rings on my fingers.
I'm so sorry. How long did this go on?
All the way through.
All the way through school. And how has it shaped you as a woman, do you think?
Well, you know, I look at it on this side because I have three jobs. At 41, I was mortgage free. I own my own place. And I do have, like, church friends and stuff, but when I see people sad and that for everything, I always get them a present, or I always do something. And
it's made you more empathetic. It's made you a better person, maybe. Like, they definitely do with me. I really related to what Jake was saying about, of course, you know, you wish it had never happened, and of course it's agonising, and I can hear the pain even talking about it. But it's also made you, I'm sure, a wonderful family member and friend and part of the community because you understand what pain feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Emma, again, it's an awful thing. Sorry, did you want to say something more, please?
I just would really like to see, I don't know who them bullies are now, where they are now.
Mm.
And I would really, really would find out if I could to actually tell them exactly how much, you know, from my mental health side and trying to take my life because of it. And they think, oh, it's just at school, but it does. It affects you all the way through.
And you want them to know the impact that they had on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. I do as well. I get that completely. I respected Jake saying he's sort of completely at peace with it and he doesn't blame them, but I think it's also totally natural, like you, Emma, and like me to an extent, to want the people who did that to you to know, at the very least, to know the impact that it had. And I can hear how big that was. Thank you, Emma, for the call. An awful, awful school experience. And I'm very, very sorry again that that happened to you. Emma in Coventry. Lots of calls coming in on bullying. 0345 6060 973 to join our conversation. We will talk more about that in a minute. And we'll look at the news that an NHS trust has called in an exorcist. More on that to come. News headlines first. It's 12:32 and here's Daryl Jackson.
The Metropolitan Police will review a report into a surgeon after it found 94 children suffered harm at his hands at Great Ormond Street Hospital. Yasser Jabbar treated hundreds of patients between 2017 and 2022. The government's announced that millions of families will receive the Warm Home discount for the rest of the decade. Eligible households will continue to get £150 off their energy bills until 2031. And women who claim they weren't told about the changes to their pension age say they're considering legal action after being denied compensation. The government says a redress scheme for so-called WASPI women wouldn't be practical.
LBC weather, rain continuing to move northeastwards today. This will be followed by drier spells before another band of rain pushes up from the southwest, highs of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Signature, our award-winning care homes are where luxury, comfort and peace of mind come together. With locations across London and the Home Counties, we offer exceptional residential, nursing and dementia care within five-star surroundings that feature a wealth of amenities, including our new wellness studios. To find out how you can receive an exclusive £1,000 discount with our new inclusive pricing, book a visit now at signaturecarehomes.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply. If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We are real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
I'm JJ Chalmers, and I'm going up and down the country to find out how UK government defence investment is creating opportunities for local people right on their doorsteps. With millions injected into traditional industries, we're seeing how pride and progress are coming together to shape the UK's future for real people. From Scotland to Sheffield, it's creating opportunities that will help support communities for generations to come. This is the UK, and we make it here.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 12:35. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. We'll talk more about bullying in just a moment. Lots of your calls coming in. I'm going to get to as many of you as I can before 1 o'clock. Something a little bit different, just for a few minutes though. An NHS trust in Norfolk has been forced to call in an exorcist, it's been revealed, at a hospice after reports by multiple people of a ghostly girl wearing a red dress. Is this a good use of taxpayers' money if it is us that had to foot the bill? And what even is an exorcist? What do they actually do? Let's talk to somebody who knows. Dr. Ian Lightfoot is a paranormal investigator with Paranormal Hunters UK. Ian, good morning to you. So what's your professional assessment then of what's going on at this hospice?
Well, I think I've read this article, and what struck me first was exactly the headlines, NHS calls in exorcist. And I was a little bit shocked, actually, when I read that, because calling in an exorcist means that, you know, you've got something demonic going on. But actually, you know, if you've got a spirit of a girl in a little red dress, there's many, many things you can do before you're kind of deciding that they need to be banished, which right. is part of the definition. It's a haunting. Yes, spirits exist. They're everywhere. She maybe wants to say hello. I don't think this is a Church of England job. I think it's a sensible, credible investigation that could say, look, you've got some spirits here. Say hello in the morning. You know, I think it's been...
So they should be trying to have a conversation with this little girl, should they?
Absolutely. I found that in the cases of our investigations, staff of pubs, people at homes, they generally just humanise the spirit and say, morning, how's things? Okay. Oh, good morning. Hope you don't mind me coming in, you know. And they find that the activity just goes away completely, or it just quietens down. And actually, they get a rapport with the spirit as well. It's quite interesting.
How do you have a rapport with a spirit?
Spirits are just, well, we believe they were people. And we had one incident where there was two of us, me and Barry, we were trying to communicate with the spirit, and we had a cat ball. The cat ball was going off. We had a number of cat balls. And every time I tried to speak, the ball went off. It wouldn't let me speak. Every time Barry spoke, it gave an answer. And then Barry said, are you just joking with us? Are you just not wanting him to talk? And the cat ball went off, and we both laughed. And then all the cat balls were going off as if it was lapping as well.
What's a cat ball?
Sorry, yeah, a cat ball. It's a really great method of communication. It's a little round sphere. Right. Cats normally pad them, and it goes off with movement. There's a little LED light, and it goes off. But if you place it stationary and you have a number of them, you can assign them numbers or a yes or no, and you can say, look, if you agree like number three. Three goes off. And number four, or number two.
So it's how you communicate with them.
It's one method. Yeah, absolutely.
So that your advice would be they should try and engage this little girl that's apparently been seen in a conversation, Ian, and try and what, make her feel welcome, or make her feel sort of not scared of, that people aren't scared of her?
Yeah, all those things. Why would you be scared? I mean, what do children do? They laugh, they giggle, they run around, they play games. Take them in a toy.
Who do you think she is? Who do you think she is, this girl?
I mean, it could be anybody, couldn't it? I mean, are there any records of people maybe that, I mean, traditionally that died there? Anybody?
It was a children's hospital, so quite possibly. Exactly. Do spirits normally hang out where they died?
That's the old adage. That's what people usually believe. Mm. I think it's something with a strong emotional tie there. And sometimes it can be people just wanting to go back and have a look and see what's going on now. I don't believe that they're all the time, but it could be someone with a strong emotional connection there.
Have you ever seen one, Ian?
Yes. Actually, I've been lucky enough to see several, usually in the shadows, movements. And usually I see spirits on videos afterwards. Last weekend, we captured a fantastic image where the landlord of the pub we were investigating was sat there at the table, and he said, look, I've got someone right behind me. There is someone stood right next to me. And unbeknown to me, clients, customers of the pub and the restaurant had also been complaining that somebody was stood by the side of them at that table while they were eating. Barry analysed his video when we got back. Clearly, right where he said somebody was standing, an outline of a lady just caught in the light. Phenomenal. And I think it's one of the best evidences we've had. I've seen lights going right next to us. We've heard footsteps. I've been touched. I've had my hair pulled. I've had noises and bangs and thuds in responses. But, you know, you don't see spirits that often. And I think it's a bit of a privilege, actually. Mm. You see somebody and they've revealed themselves.
I was going to ask you, you know, if they're everywhere, as you say, and that, you know, you're very confident they exist, why have most people never seen one or felt one or experienced one?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One, I don't think everybody has got the bandwidth in the eyes. I think also that, you know, the light spectrum, can you see it? Is the conditions absolutely right? What's the contrast in the light? Does the spirit want to reveal themselves to you? Do they have enough energy to do so? What's in it for them? From what I understand, as soon as somebody sees something, it's usually gone. The spirit usually vanishes again. For them, it can be I can be seen, and they've gone. Shadows are usually what's seen. So for somebody to have seen a little girl in a red dress and absolutely seen her, phenomenal, absolutely wonderful.
So people who say, I don't believe in ghosts, I don't believe in spirits, it's all a load of utter nonsense, what a ridiculous conversation, Ian. What would you say? And obviously there will be people listening to this who think that. I'm not convinced they exist, to be quite honest with you. What would you say to me and people who are dubious and sceptical?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that it's right, you know, we have this evidence, we believe our truth. And sometimes when you disbelieve, then you're not going to see something. You know, why would the spirits waste their energy manifesting for somebody who doesn't believe anywhere?
But is the opposite not true as well? If you go looking for them everywhere, then any kind of bit of movement or feeling a bit cold or hearing something you can't explain must be a spirit. Is there a risk of that as well?
Oh, gosh, all the time. Mm. All the time. And, you know, people will put an awful lot down to the spirits, especially in photographs, and pareidolia is very... Is this evidence credible? Is what we've got unexplainable? And there's a difference between assigning everything to a ghost or a spirit and actually saying, look, I can't really explain this. And today with AI and the power of computing, we've got to be more careful than ever. You know, we want real evidence. And I believe that the experiences I've had have taught me that, yeah, they're out there. They're there.
12:42. Thank you, Ian. Dr. Ian Lightfoot, paranormal investigator with Paranormal Hunters UK. Let it never be said we don't cover a range of topics here on Late Nights with Ben Kentish. Marion's calling in Finchley.
Hello,
just to
Ben.
Pick up on that. Hi, Marion.
I've recently published the book about the more than 100 incidents with my husband communicating with me since he died 6 years ago.
How does he communicate with you?
In so many different ways, Ben, at more than 100 ways, using 30 different methods. The last extraordinary incident, which is not in my book because my book had already gone to the publisher, but the 6th anniversary of his death was last November, 26 November. And by the way, he died very happily, and I was very happy for him because he was very ill, and he was 94.
Do you find his communications frightening or quite comforting?
No, not in the remotest bit. He's never done anything at all that would upset me. Mm. I've heard a sound once, and my helper has heard it, and my helper has also heard my smart meter buzzing. But if I could just tell you about this last incident in November. My husband died at 3:30 in the afternoon on 26 November, 6 years ago. I was with him at his bedside in the hospital. So it was 3:30. And when the 6th anniversary was approaching, I wondered how he would mark it. So the day before, my helper, who comes once a week, she said, "Marion, do you realise the clock in the kitchen is an hour fast?" Well, I hadn't noticed it. It's a radio-controlled clock, and it was an hour fast for that whole afternoon. It had gone back to its correct time by 6 o'clock when she left.
Wow.
But the next day, I thought, now, this is the anniversary. Will anything happen? Now, I had a food delivery at 3:20, and that's important because I took the carrier bags into my kitchen and then sat myself down. So I know that it was 3:30 in the afternoon when my doorbell went to the door. There was a box on the doorstep, been left, Marks and Spencer's flowers. Huh. Brought the box inside. There was a printed card from friends in Warwick saying, "This is a belated birthday gift."
Wow.
Beautiful red roses. Now, I rang my friends immediately to thank them, and the wife said, "Marion, I ordered those flowers on the 21st of October."
What, and they were delivered on the exact minute that your late husband died?
Yes.
Wow. Marion, I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm glad you find it comforting that you feel his presence in so many ways. Thank you very much indeed for calling in. That sent shivers down my spine. But yeah, why should, Marion says, why is it a source of sort of fear? It's nice that she feels he's still communicating with her. Thank you, Marion. Lovely to talk to you as always on LBC. More of your calls to come as well in just a moment on your experience of bullying. The time, 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Ball.
Why are shop thefts continuing to rise? Can Labour really be blamed for the decline in the high street? And we try out the government's newly announced AI training.
Clive Ball at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
It might be cold outside, but things are really warming up at the Wren Winter Sale, with red-hot prices on our high-quality, fully-built kitchens and fitted bedrooms. Right now, there's up to 60% off fully-built kitchens and all bedroom units, plus up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for making you feel warm inside, whatever the weather. Wren. Made for living. Visit your nearest Wren showroom. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units or 3 or more bedroom units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I must apologise profusely to poor Tom in Southsea, who says, "Ben, please stop going on about ghosts. I live on my own opposite a cemetery and I'm pooing my pants." Sorry, Tom. Can you? Is there something in the room? No, there's nothing. They don't exist, do they? Or do they? Let's come back to your thoughts on bullying, your experiences of being bullied and how it's impacted you. Perhaps it happened when you were a child, perhaps it happened when you're an adult. Either way, we know, don't we? It leaves its mark. And Peter's calling from Hackney to talk about your experience. Peter, morning to you.
Hello. Yes, I was at boarding school between the ages of 13 and 18. And my points are to do with that even if you only experience mild bullying, which was my, in my case, verbal, nonetheless, the effects can last a long time. And I came up with four results, if you like, listening to the programme and your speakers. The first one is you become very cautious about showing emotion, particularly negative emotion, because any sign of weakness or anything like that could be used as an entree or an invitation for bullying. The second one, which I think you said you had yourself, is you become mildly suspicious of people. There's a sort of hypervigilance. You don't really trust them until they've, as it were, proved themselves. You know, you've known them quite some time. So someone who has an initial trusting character may find that tuned down a bit until the caution gets done. The third one, I have a real loathing, a detestation of people who bully, and when I see it in the news or social media, or if I'm in a context like a discussion group where it happens, I can respond very aggressively verbally against the people who are doing it. So that's increased as I've got older.
I'm with you. I absolutely abhor it. I hate it in all its forms, Peter.
Because I think it is almost like the antithesis of what I regard as probably the best human quality, which is kindness. So it's the reverse of that, and I just respond very badly to that. And the fourth one, in another context, Graham Greene, the writer, had a phrase, a chip of ice in the soul for a writer. But I think it's that. So I've learned, and I think many people who bully have, you know, never to put your entire sense of value or self-worth in the hands of other people, because you may well be disappointed. So you could argue that's just a general life experience. You've got to get a thicker skin. But I think those are the four main things that...
Yeah, I very much relate to those, Peter. I think a lot of people would. Do you think you ever sort of get over it? Or do you think it becomes part of who you are as a person, that experience?
One thing, the detestation of bullying, I will never get over it, and I never would want to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I think is a slight twist on that. People who are slightly withdrawn in terms of not showing emotions, they need, and this is something I learned, you need to not be confused between the natural attribute of an introvert and an extrovert. And so introverts, as I'm sure many people will know, tend to be quite at ease in their own company, maybe only have a couple of close friends, whereas extroverts need a lot of external stimulation. So I think when one looks at the effect of closing down emotions, one has to distinguish between something that is a result of bullying and something that's intrinsic to the nature of an introvert personality.
Because it's a common reaction, is it? I think when I went through that primary school and at secondary school, I went the other way. I became a kind of brash, obnoxious class clown, you know, kind of loud, show no weakness, like you said, Peter, as a sort of reaction to...
Yeah, so just one quick thing, you just triggered me. One of my ways of coping was to actually, I'm quite witty, and I used humour as a lot of deflection, so that was an accidental accelerant to a natural ability.
Made you even funnier. Peter, it's funny, isn't it? It has so many sort of implications, positive, negative, perhaps a lot that are sort of some of both. But it has no one who's been through that, I think, says, it didn't have any impact on me. I just sort of shrugged it off. Thank you, Peter. Good to talk to you this morning. Linda is in Hackney. Morning, Linda.
Oh, good morning, Ben.
Morning to you, Linda.
Bullying has affected me most of my life. It started in childhood because I was different. My mother did it, sadly. My brother bullied me. My son did it. Partners did it.
Oh, Linda.
And I don't like people giving me compliments because I don't believe them.
It's hard for you to accept that they actually mean that when someone's nice to you, it's hard to accept.
See, I was a ginger girl. Nothing against gingers, but I got bullied because of it.
Mm.
And I was fat, and still am, and I wore glasses, and my initials were LEB. So I got called Bully Beef and Carrots.
Right.
And I make a joke of it, but that's, you know, the previous caller,
but it wasn't,
you know,
funny at the time.
I make a joke of everything, even though I don't really feel like that.
Yeah, I feel you completely.
And if people compliment on my hair now, I just cringe. because I don't believe them, you know, because obviously I'm not ginger now, I'm blonde. And I make a joke about it and say, oh, well, blondes have more fun.
So have you always been self-conscious? Have you always been self-conscious about how you look because of what you went through back then?
Yes, yes. But I sort of had the last laugh in a way because when I used to go abroad on holiday with my family, the Italian and Spanish boys used to like me and used to chase me, and you know. So I sort of had a bit of a last laugh. And of course, when Andrew married Fergie, I said, well, there you go.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Vindication. Not that you need it, Linda. You're great as you are. But I you know, I can say that. You can have a million people tell you that, and it won't feel like that because of the experience you had at a very young and formative age. Thank you, Linda. Always lovely to talk to you on the show. To Luke in Bromley. Luke, you've been bullied too?
Always good to talk to you too, Ben. Yes, I went to my secondary school, 5 years of being bullied. You know, everything from having a bag taken and emptied out somewhere, lots of name calling, I guess spitting on the bus, you get bullied by certain people. And what they're doing was they're taking advantage of my naivety and my lack of ability to insult back or my lack of willingness. Mm. You know, because I was brought up not to. And they took advantage of that and saw weakness. And yeah, it's a challenge because then you have a small amount of friends and things who aren't willing to bully you. And that was that. But I must say, it taught me resilience, it taught me forgiveness, it taught me to be strong. And it taught me to love people and treat people better than myself even more. So I've actually turned my weakness into strength. And what I didn't realise was it was tearing me up for life for when I was going to be diagnosed with Parkinson's. And, you know, it means I already had an inner strength to be able to get through other challenges.
Would you go as far as saying, Luke, that it was, you know, obviously I'm sure you wish it hadn't happened, but actually... Well, let me put it this way. If you could go back and change it and stop it happening, would you? Because it sounds like actually a lot of the consequences for you, you're kind of quite grateful for almost.
Yeah. Would I have changed it? I would have... I would try and teach someone to think about how to answer back in a nice way rather than just accept it. You know, when you sit down and they put pins on the chair and, you know, it just goes on and on.
You wish you stood up yourself for a bit more back then.
But what helped me was basically, as a Christian, I found that I went to church and, you know, that was lovely. And I had friends there who treated me well. So my faith actually really helped me. I used to read Psalm 23. To read that, that's great comfort. And pray and forgive them.
Have you been able to do that, Luke? The people who put you through that, do you feel forgiveness towards them now?
It's interesting to say that because, yes, I did, but only a couple of weeks ago I went through a process of writing down all the names of the people who bullied me. And I just prayed to God and said, you know, if there's any unforgiveness, then, you know, help me to fully forgive them.
Wow. It takes a lot of strength, that, Luke. It really does, to forgive people that have inflicted such pain and suffering on you. But good for you for being able to. I'm not sure I'm as strong a man as you. But thank you very much indeed for the call. Luke, this is Dee in Hammersmith. I was continuously beaten up at junior school by a boy that was as big as a boxer. He would punch me in the face frequently for no reason at all. It stopped after my mother had enough and talked to a family member of his and threatened to do him harm if he continued. I'm a 67-year-old woman. I remember him, his name and his mate to this day, and I still hate him, says Dee in Hammersmith. Again, illustrating, I think, just how long-lasting the impacts of bullying can be. Let's talk to Noel in Tottenham this morning. Morning, Noel.
Morning. Yeah, I've got something interesting. I was bullied from the age of 6 to 16 at my special needs boarding school. Relentless bullying. I was first punched in the back when I hadn't been there long. This boy was about 15. His fist was the size of my torso. Sent me flying. And I rang home. My dad comes and takes my look at him. He says to headmaster, this is school for handicapped children. Mm. Turned out the boy had brain damage. So I was in a special school. My parents weren't told that's what type of school it was. First we had no curriculum. Next abuse I suffered, I was 12. I'm in a playground. They're told to go in, so I'm on my way in. And a support worker pulls me into her, beats me over there repeatedly, calls me a black so-and-so. So I run away from school. They bring me back, put me to bed early. Don't believe me. They actually just want to beat me for no reason. Luckily, my mum is me at night, comes takes me out of school. That's when my life changed. I ended up back in that school to get bullied by the deputy headmistress for the next 4 years.
Oh, no. And when you're at boarding school, you can't get away from it, can you? You just cannot find a way. One of the most harrowing phone-ins I've ever done on this programme was talking about people's experience of boarding school and the bullying that took place there and the inability to escape. Thank you, Noel. I just want to squeeze in Tony very, very briefly. Hope Clive won't mind. Tony, you've been on the line a long, long time, so I didn't want to hand over without at least saying hello and just getting a sense, if you would, briefly, of your experience of bullying. Morning, Tony.
Hello, Ben. I think if Richard, your first call, a bit like him, it was later on in life. Primary school, I loved primary school.
Mm.
And then when I went to secondary school, you had your normal bullying there. But I was, in a sense, I was quite lucky because I loved sports. So as I got older, I got bigger and stronger. And let's just say, after about 13, 14, I didn't get bullied again.
Good. Do you think you changed you as a man, Tony? Do you think Tony today is different as a result of it?
Absolutely. I felt really good. And all growing up my life, you know, I started work.
Yep.
I was the one that always organised a Christmas party. And I said, I played a lot of sport and I was good at sport, especially good. Football.
So what would you say to the bullies now if they were listening?
I got my own back on them. Let's just say that.
You got there in the end. You got the upper hand in the end. Thank you, Tony. And thank you for waiting patiently in the line. If you listen to that and you are being bullied, I know it's easy to say, but it's not about you. It's never about you. It's always about the bully. I know it doesn't feel that way, but that is the reality. And if you know in your heart of hearts that maybe you are a bit of a bully, or you have been, or maybe you have a tendency to be, just think about the impact, will you? Think about the calls you've heard this hour and just don't. It's not that hard. Just don't be a bully. If you are affected by that conversation, you can contact the Samaritans anytime 24/7 on 116 123. You can also contact the National Bullying Helpline, great charity, on 0300 323 0169. 0300 323 0169. And if you didn't grab a pen in time for those numbers, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the brand new LBC app to get those down. The National Bullying Helpline, 0300 323 0169. Thank you to everybody who called in to share your very open and moving stories of being bullied. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Always a pleasure to be with you at this time in the night. I'll be back with you on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend in the meantime. Coming up at 4 on LBC, Ian Payne's here. Right now, here's Clive Bull.
Ben, thank you. Coming up after the news at 1, the latest crime figures show violent crime is down, but there's been a significant rise in thefts from shops. So is shoplifting just part of everyday life, do you think, now? An automatic cost for retailers? Is there anything that can be done to stop it happening? And meanwhile, a new study is claiming that Labour will face election wipeout unless it improves Britain's high streets. Can Labour really be held accountable for the decline of the high street? And how can that decline be reversed? Also, Britain and China hail a reset as Keir Starmer says his visit is the start of a more sophisticated relationship. And the government has announced it's offering AI training for up to 10 million people. We'll be trying it out. That and more after the news at 1 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, American politicians have until 5 a.m. tomorrow, our time, to agree a funding deal or the US government will suffer its second shutdown in months. It will mean non-essential services close and some workers won't get paid. Democrats have blocked a funding bill over immigration raids in Minneapolis, which have left two US citizens dead. But President Donald Trump thinks disruption can be avoided.
Hopefully we won't have a shutdown. We're working on that right now. I think we're getting close. The Democrats, I don't believe, want to see it either. So we'll